All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out of a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. And it is Wednesday, which means it's Wild Card Wednesday. You're very Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. And Ben will, this is Ben's first Wild Card Wednesday, playing the weird requests. They get a little weird, Ben, just know that ahead of time.
That works. Fits okay. For me.
All right, so that's Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in now. We're doing it all morning. We'll play them a little bit later on. It's any artist, any song, anything, requests now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are here all morning, and in a little bit, we're going to be talking about, this is hard to believe, it's the 20th anniversary of the movie Office Space, which is just insane, actually, that it's 20 years old. We're going to talk about some of the facts behind Office Space and maybe some things that you didn't know about it. We'll talk about the movie in general. And then we're going to talk about office and work topics to kick off after that. We're going to be talking about some embarrassing workplace confessions, some of the best places to work. In 2019, and one of my favorite things is work jargon. There's specific words and phrases and specific jargon for many different kinds of jobs, and so we're going to talk about workplace jargon. And I want to hear from you guys some of the jargon that you used in your jobs, maybe jobs now or jobs past. 312-981-7200. And then a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the best debut movie performances of all times and breakout roles. Maybe not the first performance for an actor or an actress, but certainly the performance that got them noticed. It was the breakout, boom, big breakout role. Making big impressions in either your first movie or very early in your career that you it really got noticed. Great performances. So that's coming up as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us at any time for talk or text, and of course, Wildcard Wednesday requests. And you could also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on Facebook, too, at Facebook.com/Nick D Show, if you would like to join us on our Facebook page. So there you go. So for those people who have not been listening over the past couple of days, Dan Shugru has left WGN and he no longer produces my show. He did announce it on Monday morning show. Officially, and we're sad that he's gone, but he needed to take some time for himself. He was burning his candle at both ends, and it was getting to him a little bit, so he had to get away. So he left WGN, no longer produces my show. Ben Anderson is now filling in as producer, and will do so for a while. But I just want to let people know about that. But we will continue to do a great show and have a lot of fun here. And let me say hello to Ben. Ben, how are you?
Pretty good.
All right. It's Wednesday morning, and week's going by pretty fast.
Really fast.
Yeah. And by the way, so we've got this winter weather advisory happening.
Again.
Yeah. And it keeps happening again. And I know the reason why it's happening today, this morning.
Why is it?
Because it's Tom Skilling's birthday. So it's a gift from the gods to Tom Skilling for his birthday.
It totally makes sense.
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
how do we explain the vortex then?
Well, that was building up to Tom's birthday. It was it was a month away. It was a month anniversary before Tom's birthday. That's what I like to think. So, and it's really apropos that he was born in the winter. I think that that really makes sense that Tom Skilling was born in the winter. So anyway, so happy birthday to Tom Skilling. He's the best. He's awesome. So there you go. That's Ben is in the producing. And in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how you doing?
Hey, doing very, very well. Good morning.
Good morning. Good
Tom
morning.
Skilling's birthday today. Yes, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And I came in about 10 o'clock last night into the newsroom. And guess who was on TV working the night before
that
his birthday?
That would be Tom Skilling.
10 p.m.
Yeah. The hardest working man in the biz, yep. Man.
Happy birthday to Tom
Happy
Skilling.
Happy birthday to Tom Skilling. Absolutely. No, he's the best, man. He is, he is the best. And you know, if you want to know about the weather, anything that has to do with the weather, that's the guy to go to. Like, he's the number one guy. And I'm not just saying that because he works for WGN. I'm saying that because he's the best meteorologist in the business.
Very passionate about it.
And also a rock star.
He is.
The guy's a rock star.
And for that kind of status, I mean, really, locally, he is. He's beloved here in Chicago by so many people. And to have that level of status and then to be as humble as he is. I know you hear people talk about it all the time, but he really is.
He's a really nice guy. He's an incredibly nice guy. But he's a rock star. I got to tell you this, Vic. I have been lucky enough to go to many, many Hawks games in suites, you know. And I also, there was a period of time where I was going, I was actually in the suites with, you know, Bobby Hull and Dennis Savard and all those guys.
Right.
And it was just, it was incredible. But I remember a couple of times Tom Skilling showed up and came to a couple of games and sat in the suites with us. And I'm not exaggerating when he got more attention than the Hawks ambassadors did.
Did he really?
That's the kind of rock star. People coming up to Tom Skilling, they want their picture taken, they want an autograph. It's, oh my God, it's Tom Skilling, oh my God, it's Tom Skilling. He's standing next to Bobby Hull, and everybody is just like, oh my God, look at Tom Skilling, it's Tom Skilling. I'm not kidding.
I believe it.
I'm not kidding. And it was, you know.
That's funny. That is funny.
But yeah, no, and, you know, people love the guy, and he's so good, man. He's so, you know.
Isn't he a lovable type
he
guy?
He is,
though,
man. And his appearances here on the radio are great. And, you know, his incredibly detailed forecasts. I mean, my God, man. I mean, his weather forecasts go on for 15 minutes. And then he always has, like, deep, significant, and educational explanations for why the weather is the way it is. And. Yeah.
Well, I very rarely, you're right. I mean, he's one of the few meteorologists who will give you the forecast and actually teach you a few things.
Exactly.
Most of us in him. There may be some people out there that already know.
Yeah.
But I rarely get through one of his forecasts without going, huh.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right, man. He's the best. And you know, when weather like this is, you know, I mean, it's not going to be horrible as bad as it was last week.
No.
I mean, like, we got a little snow coming down, then we'll have a little ice, and it'll be gone by what? Late afternoon, they said?
Yep.
So, you know, but still, when any kind of sort of winter weather advisory or a warning pops up, the first dude that you want to go to, you want to check out online is Tom Skilling. And he posts like a maniac on Facebook whenever there's any kind of sort of weather issue. You know, you can count on him. You know, even if you don't go to the WGN TV website or our website to get Skilling's forecast, just if you're on Facebook and you're friends with him or you like his page, he posts constantly during weather events and because right. He cares, you know, he loves doing the research. He loves talking about weather. He also loves to help people during these kind of weather events that are freaky, you know.
Well, to him, a storm would be the same to you as maybe the Oscars or something
exactly
like that.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
I mean?
That's
his thing.
No, he's so in his element. He's so in his element. When you watch him report on these things, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, like, these could be terrifying weather circumstances with tornadoes and all kinds of really crazy stuff, but he's just like, oh, because, all right, here's the thing. Vic, do you remember his reaction?
I know what you're going to say already.
To the eclipse?
Yes.
That was
it's such a cool video,
oh
though.
Oh, my God.
It's so cool.
It's just amazing. I mean, because he really thinks the Earth and the world is beautiful, and what happens and the atmosphere and all of that stuff is just so wonderful. And his genuinely beautiful reaction to that eclipse It's one of my favorite things. It was one of my favorite things. We played the audio a bunch of times because he's like, oh wow, and he was just so amazed by how beautiful the eclipse was. And that's Tom's killing, man.
Yeah, if you have any doubts about his how genuine he is about his love for the weather is, just watch that clip.
No, absolutely. And it's not an act, man. That's him. That's Skilling. So happy birthday, Tom Skilling. I hope there's another eclipse. No, there's not going to be, but. But there is a crazy moon. Isn't there some sort of crazy moon happening right now?
I think it was yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, because when I was going home in the morning, my God, it was bright. Like, it was full and bright and crazy. Yeah. I mean, when we get Rod Pyle in here to talk about space, he can tell us about what's going on with the moon, since he's our resident expert, and he's going to be coming on pretty soon on the show. But yeah, it was crazy. And you know, Ben, you've not worked. This is your first time, like, consistently working the overnights, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed, but during the full moon, the calls get weirder. So be aware of that.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
it might be a little bit harder to screen the calls because you get a lot of weirdos and you go, hey, thanks for calling.
Yeah, that's nothing new though. You know, I've coming here, I finished a 20-year career in the bar industry.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So I got used to some full moon weekends.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand. Happenings. But we just got to watch out to make sure none of the weirdos get on the air.
Oh, okay.
That's the point, is to make sure that they don't get the weirdos don't get on the air.
Well, in that case, I might have to take the rest of the night off.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. Well, listen, speaking of weird, see how I segue? You know? See?
Well played.
Vic, you see that? You see why?
Professional.
That's why I have a Walk of Fame plaque. That's why. That's why.
Always two steps ahead.
You know, a lot of weird stuff comes out of Japan. Have you noticed? You guys noticed just that a lot of, and I'm not passing judgment, but some really strange things come out of Japan.
Yeah.
In entertainment, in technology, like sex dolls and stuff are just massive in Japan, and Japan has the weirdest TV shows. By the way, I want to talk about that at some point this week, because I think tomorrow we're gonna take on some game show talk. We'll talk about some of the greatest game shows, some classic game shows, some of the greatest hosts, some of the best game shows of all time. And then we'll probably jump in and talk about some of the weird game shows and some of the absolutely insane TV shows from Japan. I've watched several specials, and you could see this stuff on YouTube. Have you ever gone down that wormhole, Ben?
Oh, yeah.
Where you just, like, you see some weird, like, you know, Japanese TV thing, and then that leads to another one, and you literally can sit in front of the computer and watch these absolutely insane, weird Japanese TV shows. It's just crazy, some of the ones. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But I have another weird story out of Japan. This one is, this is a weird museum. So they want to cover all the bases of weirdness, I guess, in Japan. So now they're covering the world of museums. So I will tell you after this break about a weird museum that is coming to Japan. So, again, our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And text in your requests. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You're very Wild Card Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, anything. Get them in right now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And so when we come back, I'll tell you about this weird museum in Japan. And then we'll celebrate the 20th anniversary of Office Space and then talk about a lot of office and work-related topics. That's all coming up here on the morning show, on the overnight show, live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. And we'll be back right after we take a break here. Yeah, there it is. Wild Card Wednesday. It's proof that it's Wild Card Wednesday. Ben, expect a lot of weird choices, and the Wild Card Wednesday requests consist of a lot of weird TV theme songs, and there's a TV theme song right there.
I'm a TV theme song guy.
Yeah,
I have, like 8 CDs, just full, like hundreds,
and none of them. Okay. The TV theme song is a lost art because they don't really exist anymore because there are like no credits anymore.
Yeah.
On TV shows because they got to get to the next show. So they shrink the credits down. They don't play any songs. And they give you a preview of what's coming up next and all that stuff. So that's Top Cat, correct? Requested that?
That was a request from the 301 area code.
All right. Get your requests in. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You're being Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200. Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. All right, it's Nick DiGilio here, live in the Allstate Skyline studio, here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 o'clock with the opening bell. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And, yeah, so I was talking about before the break that a lot of weird things come out of Japan. They just have a lot of strange stuff. And we're going to cover the weird TV world of Japan tomorrow on tomorrow's show. We'll jump into that topic because... some of the stuff that they have on TV in Japan is absolutely mind-blowingly strange. But now the weirdness is moving on to the world of museums. And here's the headline that I'm reading. A poop museum is coming to Japan. A poop museum is coming to Japan. The itinerary for your dream trip to Japan just got a little longer. A pop-up poop museum is coming to Yokohama, Japan's second largest city by population, and an area that's easily reached by bullet train from Tokyo. So get your itinerary ready. Get on that bullet train to poo land. As Time Out Tokyo reports, the Unko Museum, or, quote, poop museum, is slated to open on March 15th, around the same time that the international tourists will be flocking to Japan to take part in the Sakura season, which marks the annual blooming of the country's pretty pink cherry blossoms. Turd-themed installations seem to be the antithesis of fresh, delicate flowers, but this museum won't be obscene or crass. Like most things in Japan, this poop will be kawaii, which is Japanese for all things adorable. The Instagram-friendly museum will be championed by its resident mascot, Unberuto, who happens to be a literal walking pile of poo who carries a toilet around on his shoulder as if it were a boombox. Also, Poo Boy, the other anthropomorphic feces figure from the 1984 manga series Dr. Slump, is said to have inspired much of Japan's poop kawaii culture. Yes, it's the poop kawaii culture. So, Unberuto is a walking pile of poo, carries a toilet around his shoulder, like a boombox. That is fantastic.
That's magical.
It's fantastic. According to Wired, Japan launched its first poo emoji in 2000, a decade before the Unicode Consortium adopted the smiling pile of poo emoji that we all know and love today. It goes without saying that this quirky museum will not feel out of place in Japan, which is also home to a museum of parasites and a love doll museum. Believe it or not, the Unko Museum won't be the world's first poop museum either. That dubious honor goes to the Museo Delia Merida, which is the S Museum. I can't say the word. And that's in Italy, which covers the history of poop as well as innovative uses for manure. There's also a National Poo Museum on England's Isle of Wight, where you can find displays of different types of feces as well as fossilized dung from 140 million years ago. However, if you have dreams of snapping selfies in front of steaming piles of pink doo-doo in Japan, you better book your trip fast because the exhibit closes July 15th. So it's only March 15th to July 15th. Get your reservations going now. Get to the Poo Museum. So... I happen to have a weakness, I think you know this, Ben, for mascots. Mascots make me laugh.
Oh, really?
Oh, you didn't know this?
No, I didn't know that.
No, that's one of the reasons why I like the Masked Singer so much, because it just cracks me up. I think mascots are just hilarious. Anytime I see a mascot, I just immediately laugh. And, of course, Tommy Hawk is the greatest mascot of all time.
Oh, yeah.
But I love them. I love all mascots. When this thing opens up, I have to see a picture of this Unburuto, the walking pile of poo with the toilet as a boombox. I need to see a picture of that. So, all right, if you're interested in the Poo Museum, you got to go to Japan. Starts March 15th for a limited time only.
Man, did this show just get crappy?
Yeah, it did. it is every morning, but now literally. Okay, we got to hit the news coming up in just a few seconds.
Streaks on the china, never mattered before. Who cares when you drop kick your jacket as you came through the door? No one glared, but sometimes things get turned around and no one spared. All hands look out below. There's a change in the status quo. Gonna need all the help that we can get. According to our new arrival, life is more than mere survival.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Wildcard Wednesday. You're made Wildcard Wednesday. It's any artist, any song, anything. Who requested that? And explain.
That was Pat from Joliet requesting the Mr. Belvedere theme.
That's right.
I was a fan. I liked that show.
Yeah, they enjoy the TV theme songs on the Wildcard Wednesday, which is fine with me. I think it's kind of fun. I never did watch the Mr. Belvedere. There was a period of time in the late 80s when I just didn't watch a lot of TV. I was in my 20s and I was out all the time. I was out all the time, and I didn't watch a lot of TV, so I missed out on Mr. Belvedere. That Euchre was in that, right, Bob Euchre?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. Anyway, so that's Wildcard Wednesday. Get them in. 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. So you guys fans of Office Space, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's the 20th anniversary of Office Space, which is, it makes me feel really, really old. Because it's hard to believe that movie came out 20 years ago. And like a lot of Mike Judge's stuff, with the exception of, you know, like Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill, but I mean his movie output, Mike Judge's movie output, nobody sees it when it first comes out, and then suddenly, you know, people realize that it's brilliant. And that's what happened with Office Space. Office Space did not do well when it was first released 20 years ago. But since then, obviously, it's become a classic, and it's become a movie that anybody who has ever worked, you know, in a cubicle or in an office, can really identify with. And it's really funny and smart. I happen to think Mike Judge is a genius, and I love everything he does. I love Silicon Valley. He did a movie that absolutely no one saw with Jason Bateman called Extract, which is a really terrific movie that nobody saw. And of course, you know, Idiocracy is a movie that, it's a documentary now. It's like watching a documentary. When it came out, it was completely over the top and ridiculous, but you watch it now and it's like, it's so prescient. It's unbelievable. To watch that movie now. It's also brilliantly funny. I remember this is how terrible Fox treated Idiocracy when it was released. This is a true story. When Idiocracy came out, I think it was in 2005 or 2006 is when it came out. 20th Century Fox just dumped it. They absolutely dumped it. They spent no money on ads. They did not screen it for critics. There was no publicity tour. There was nothing. They just dumped it. They didn't know what to make of the movie. They didn't know what they had. Clearly, the executives at Fox didn't understand it, didn't think it was funny, and decided, forget it. We're not going to do anything. It's a bomb. Forget it. Who cares? Let's just get rid of it, throw it in a few theaters for a week, get it out of here, and then throw it on DVD. But what they didn't expect, first of all, was the people who did see it embraced it, thought it was brilliant and hilarious, which it is, and as years go by, how much of it came true now makes Idiocracy even more terrifying. Like, it's a movie to watch now and you go, oh my God. But when Idiocracy came out, and I knew it was coming out because I'm a huge Mike Judge fan. I knew he had a new movie. I knew it was coming out. This is a true story. Remember back in the days when you would look in the newspaper to see when a movie started? You would, you know, go to the movie section in a newspaper and you would find the theater and look for the showtimes. That's how we used to find out how movies start. Now we check our phones and go, okay, it starts in 20 minutes. Okay. But back in the day, you check the newspaper. I remember checking the newspaper the Friday that the movie opened, and I knew it was opening that weekend. And this is how much Fox didn't care about the release of Idiocracy. This is how much they didn't care. I looked at the theater to see where it was. Looked in the theater to see it was playing. It was playing at the City North, which is now the Regal Theater, City North, which is on Western, right by the Kennedy, right off the Kennedy. You see it when you drive by on the Kennedy. So it's playing at the City North. I look for the show times, and there is no movie called Idiocracy listed. But there is a movie called Untitled Mike Judge Project. That's how they released the movie, because they didn't even know the title of the movie. Fox didn't care enough. So we literally said, you showtimes for Untitled Mike Judge Project. And I just was like beside myself. I was like, how can you not even, what kind of studio has so much has no respect for the filmmaker or the movie itself to not even put the title of the movie in the newspaper where people are going to be checking to see what showtime it starts, what time it starts. So yeah, Untitled Mike Judge Project was what was listed in the paper. So my ex and I, my ex-wife and I, we go. There are three other people in the theater because who's going to know what Untitled Mike Judge Project means? And those three other people were clearly Mike Judge fans. You know, because they knew the movie, they knew Idiocracy was coming out, and all of us, all five of us in the theater, laughed our asses off through the entire movie, loved it. I gave it a rave review on the air and encouraged people to go see the movie, try to find the title, but that's the way it was released, and I think it was released that way in every state, or whatever cities that they dumped the movie into the theater. They didn't even bother to give the title of the movie out. And now, of course, as years have gone by, people realize that Idiocracy is brilliant. It was ahead of its time, and it's unbelievably funny. And now people love it. Of course, now they embrace it. And the same thing happened with Office Space. When Office Space came out, nobody went to see it. It tanked. And of course, people did start to see it again, especially people who worked in offices, who did 9-to-5, who did the cubicle thing, you know, saw the movie and went, oh, my God, this thing is right on the head. And that's the thing about Mike Judge, man. I mean, going all the way back to Beavis and Butthead, his satire is on the money. It's absolutely on the money and brilliant. And, you know, and Beavis and Butthead, you know, has this reputation. Oh, it's so stupid. It's these two stupid kids. It's one of the smartest TV shows ever. Like, one of the most brilliant satires of all time. King of the Hill, I love King of the Hill. I think King of the Hill was a brilliant show and really, really funny. And like I said, his movie work is great. And now Silicon Valley is a tremendous show and really smart and really funny and really ahead of its time. That's the way Mike Judge is, man. He sees what's happening now. He predicts what's going to happen in the future in terms of satire, in terms of comedy, and he does it. And he's right 90% of the time, because Silicon Valley predicted a ton of stuff that eventually happened. And by the way, as you found out yesterday, a good friend of the show is Stephen Tobolowsky, who appeared on Silicon Valley and was hilarious on Silicon Valley. Tobo has told so many great stories about working with Mike Judge and working on that show, and how the script is updated just so it's more timely constantly, because that's what Mike Judge wants, the satire to be timely and maybe ahead of its time. And that's the way that he works.
That's really cool.
He's brilliant. I think Mike Judge is absolutely brilliant, and I love Office Space. I know one of the actors in Office Space.
Oh, really?
Yeah, AJ Nadeau, who played Samir.
Oh, yeah.
He went to Columbia College. I knew him from there. He acted here in Chicago. He's a good guy, really, really good guy. And I knew him for a long time before he went out to L.A. And I was thrilled that he was in this movie. And he's had a really cool career. He's done a bunch of TV, done a bunch of movies. But it's great that I love that AJ's in this movie, that AJ is in this movie, because this now is a cult classic. This is a movie that everybody really loves. 20 years ago, yes, you're really that old, Office Space forever changed how we look at cubicle life. Like a much funnier Dilbert meets Beavis and Butthead meets the then largely misunderstood world of Silicon Valley. The comedy movie from Beavis creator Mike Judge skewered everything from didactic middle management bosses to chain restaurant uniforms. It gave us a charming Jennifer Aniston love story plus a rap mini music video dedicated to the destruction of malfunctioning printers. No, it was a fax machine.
That was my favorite scene of the movie.
It's a fax machine, though. Yeah. They got that wrong. It's a fax machine. Yeah. That is hilarious. For all that and more, the 1999 film that originally performed poorly at the box office has become a widely quoted cult sensation. And here are some interesting facts and references to look for the next time that you watch Office Space. This is going to be fun because I love watching the movie. And that scene that they're talking about where they beat the hell out of the fax machine is just, I don't know how many people wanted to do that. How many people just like vicariously lived through these guys beating the crap out of this fax machine. You know, and also the opening scene of Office Space when they're driving to work. man. And they're being lapped by old people on the sidewalk and because they're not moving. And the one dude is listening. He's listening to rap. He's listening to gangster rap, but he approaches a car with African American in it and turns the volume down on the radio. And you know, Stephen Root, I mean, come on, man. That's with his red stapler. And man, I mean, what can you say about Gary Cole? Oh my God. You're gonna have to come in tomorrow. And he's that all of Gary Cole's scenes have been quoted over and over and over again. Yeah. Everybody knows a person like that in the office. Everybody, and that's the other thing about this movie. Now granted, you know, I've been working here for a really long time, and for the most part, nobody's here. You know what I mean? Like the office is not. The offices are closed. All the departments are not here. It's usually a skeleton crew of us, you know, holding down the fort on the overnight. But I have worked in offices in the past, and you know, and there have been times when I've been here at GN because I've been here for such a long time that I've filled in on every possible. I've hosted every possible time slot on this radio station. I've hosted everything. And so I've been here, you know, around and worked, and you know, the office politics that happen everywhere. And that's one of the reasons why the universal appeal of Office Space has grown, and people love it. Because anybody who's ever worked in an office, there are things that are painfully accurate about Office Space. So here are some things about Office Space. We're going to get into it right after we take a break. If you're a fan of Office Space and you want to jump in, and then we're going to talk about just work-related topics, some fun stuff, and then we're going to get into some work jargon, which is always one of my favorite things. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And remember, get your requests in, too, for Wildcard Wednesday. But we're going to break. We'll come back, tell you some things to look for and some facts about Office Space on its 20th anniversary right after we break here on 720 WGN. Card Wednesday continues. Get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything. Doing it till 5 here. So get your requests in now. You have been Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Who requested that? And that was Elton John.
Yeah, Elton John, Country Comfort. And that came from Paul out of Waukesha, Wisconsin.
All right. There you go, Paul. All right. Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200. So it's hard to believe that Office Space is 20 years old. And in fact, it was released yesterday, was marked the exact 20th anniversary. It was released on February 19th of 1999. And Yeah, so it's hard to believe that, but it is it's 20 years old, and it's turned out to be a classic. Didn't make a lot of money when it came out, but we have some things to look for and some facts about Office Space. Here we go. One, it was shot very, very far from Silicon Valley. Office Space keeps its setting purposely vague, but the opening driving shots clue a perceptive viewer into the location. Notice the sign for Preston Road on Highway 289 in the background, which indicates that we've been dropped around Plano, Texas. The movie was shot in and around Austin, where Mike Judge lives, making him something of a Hollywood outsider. Probably another reason why they don't have respect for him, because he lives in Austin, stays away from Hollywood. But Office Space is clearly attuned to the rituals and lingo of Silicon Valley's tech scene. In fact, Judge worked as an engineer in the California area in the 80s, which would go to inform much of the satire, especially his popular HBO show Silicon Valley. So, shot in Texas. How about this? It was Mike Judge's first foray into movies, and it didn't work out as planned. Starting out as a self-taught animator in Texas, Judge made his name in entertainment with cartoons that aired on Saturday Night Live and eventually turned into his own MTV show. Beavis and Butthead premiered in 1993 when the cable network's scripted offerings were still in their infancy and quickly became both a commercial hit and a cause of nationwide controversy. He went on to co-create Fox's slightly more family-friendly King of the Hill, but Office Space marked his live-action directorial debut in film. He previously helmed the movie adaptation of Beavis and Butthead Do America, which is genius, by the way. Beavis and Butthead Do America is a great film. It was made on an estimated $10 million budget. It earned only slightly more than that in the U.S. theaters. Sadly, that failure has become something of a pattern for Judge's work, his movie work. Future efforts, Idiocracy and Extract, failed to catch on with initial audiences, though the former has grown into a cult hit. I think we should make Extract a cult hit. I really do. It's a brilliant movie. It's really, really funny, and consistent with the kind of brilliant satire and comedy that Mike Judge does, and nobody saw Extract. In fact, Extract made less than Idiocracy did, if I'm not mistaken. I know it hasn't caught on like the way that Idiocracy has. I know it hasn't, but it's really, really good. Let's have the Nick DiGilio show turn Extract into a cult hit, like all of Mike Judge's stuff. So yeah, it bombed on the initial release. It didn't exactly make Ron Livingston a household name. Office Space had all the makings of a breakout for its handsome top-billed star, who was coming off a smaller part in the comedy phenomenon Swingers. But given its early commercial disappointment, he continued to seek out smaller parts in interesting left-field projects like Adaptation and The Cooler. He finally got his mainstream cred as the boyfriend of Carrie Bradshaw on Sex and the City. He's the one who broke up with her via Post-it note. with the massively popular horror flick The Conjuring, he's currently starring in two series, A Million Little Things and Loudermilk. You know who I get him confused with, Ron Livingston?
Who?
Kyle Chandler.
I could see that.
I look at them and I'm like, wait a minute, which one? And it's and they don't. I mean, they kind of look similar. They have similar features. I mean, Kyle Chandler's older,
yeah,
and has made a lot more mainstream stuff, successful mainstream stuff, than Ron Livingston has. But I always like whenever I see them. Is that wait a minute? Is that Ron Livingston or is that Kyle Chandler? That's the first thing that pops into my head. I do the same thing with Drea what's her name? Drea Diater, what's her name?
DiMatteo?
Yeah, Drea DiMatteo. Now she was on Sopranos, right? Drea DiMatteo, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because yeah. The one I get her confused with doesn't look anything like her, but I get her confused with Portia de Rossi, Ellen's wife.
Oh yeah,
okay. And she was on Arrested Development, and I get them confused all the time. Like I go, and they don't look anything alike. I don't know why it is. And then, of course, probably the biggest example is Dermot Mulroney and Dylan McDermott, which is one of my favorites. They did a sketch, a game show satire, a game show parody on Saturday Night Live. And it was the game show was Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney. And Bill Hader was the host. It was very, very, very funny. Inatech has a very symbolic statue. The statue outside the Inatech office shows a square peg in a round hole. It's no coincidence. It's a reference to the common idiom referring to an individualist who doesn't fit into a particular social mode. That could describe Livingston's Peter, whose co-worker friends Jennifer Aniston's Jonah, and more self-referentially, Judge himself, who has always made movies and series about outsiders. That's true. God, Mike Judge is hilarious in Office Space, too. Hilarious. You can tell a lot about Bill Lumberg from his vanity plate. Everything you need to know about Division VP Bill Lumberg, played by Gary Cole in a brilliant, brilliant performance, is established in an early shot of him pulling into his reserved parking spot at Inatech with his blue Porsche and a customized license plate that reads, My P-R-S-H-E. Low-key, but also notice the lack of any regional designation on the license plate in the film. True. Wants to keep that a mystery. TPS has a real meaning. Lumberg's single-minded obsession with the details of TPS reports drives much of the cubicle set humor, but what exactly is a TPS report? Potential meanings abound, especially given that companies love an abbreviation, and Judge revealed that TPS refers to test program set reports, which dated back to his engineering days. Just TPS reports. Oh, man. All right. We have to, we're going to break here. If you've seen the movie and you like the movie, it's Office Space, celebrating its 20th anniversary. The 20th anniversary of the day of its release was yesterday. And we're telling you some things that you can look for the next time you watch Office Space and some facts about the movie. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And then we're going to jump into office and work-related topics, including work jargon and best places to work and embarrassing stories and all that cool stuff. And then we want to share our work stories with each other. So it's 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and, of course, Wildcard Wednesday requests, any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Yeah, it's Wild Card Wednesday, all right. It's the only time on the show on Wednesday morning is when you can hear the Give Me a Break TV theme song. Who requested that one, Ben?
That was from Chris, from all the way from Greenwood, South Carolina.
Look at that, Chris from Greenwood, South Carolina. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, obviously. Get your requests in now. Text them in at 312-981-7200. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. Here's what I remember about Give Me a Break. I watched Give Me a Break. I remember that's another one of those shows where they added a cute kid. Because that's a thing in sitcoms. Like, if a show is not doing as well, bring in a cute, let's add a cute kid.
Do you remember who that cute kid was?
Joey Lawrence.
Joey Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah. Joey Lawrence, who, by the way, was just on Celebrity Big Brother and only lasted a week and a half before they booted him. Yep, and that's what he said. When they booted him, that's what they said. But yeah, it was Joey Lawrence, and then there were three daughters, right? And the father, who eventually passed away, like in real life, the actor passed away, was Dolph Sweet, was his name.
Yeah.
He was a cop, and Nell Carter was the housekeeper.
Yep.
Three daughters, and then, like, when he passed away, Nell Carter, I think, just, like, became the matriarch of the whole of the thing. They brought in the little kid, the cute little kid. And the only other thing, I remember I watched it, because I think I thought one of the daughters was cute. I think I had a little crush on one of the daughters, and I'm trying to remember.
Carrie Michelson.
I can't remember. I'd have to
the
see
blonde.
Her. Is it? Yeah. Is that what?
Yeah.
Because there were three of them, right? And they all varied in age. Like she was the oldest, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the one that I had like a little crush on. But the other thing that I remember about the opening credits during that, when you would hear that song that we just played on Wildcard Wednesday here, is Nell Carter is vacuuming, and she accidentally puts the vacuum in the aquarium and vacuums up the fish. Yeah. That's the only thing that I remember. It's the only specific thing that I remember. She's like, oh, oops. Yeah, she sucks up the fish into the vacuum cleaner. So, all right. More Wild Card Wednesday from you guys. Yeah, man. 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything. And Ben will take care of it. All right, we are live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. And we are talking about office space. Then we're going to jump into some real-life office and work-related topics. And if you're a fan of office space, we've got some more facts that you can learn and watch out for the next time you watch it. The food at Tchotchke's sounds less appetizing. Sounds less than appetizing. Now, Tchotchke's was the sort of, you know, TGIF-inspired strip mall restaurant that the guys went to, you know, for lunch and stuff. And that's where Jennifer Aniston worked. That's where Mike Judge's character worked as well. And so this is Tchotchke's, the fictional restaurant where they had to have flair on their uniform. There was a certain number of flair that they had on their uniform, which would be like buttons and stuff that would be on their apron or their uniform. A sign at the restaurant promotes its shrimp poppers in the movie, a food name that leaves a lot to be the imagination. Later, chipper server Brian highlights pizza shooters and extreme fajitas. Whatever a pizza shooter is, it can't be good. What's really funny about that, about these names, like your pizza shooters and your shrimp poppers, those sound almost exactly like dishes that you could find at a Guy Fieri restaurant. I really think that, you know, like shrimp poppers is something that I would not, you know, bat an eye if it appeared on a Guy Fieri menu at one of his restaurants. Because doesn't he call it like, I can't remember, like some of the stuff that he calls his food in his restaurant. One of the funniest things ever was the New York Times review of Guy Fieri's restaurant, Guy Fieri's Times Square restaurant. It's one of the funniest. It's brutal. I mean, it's brutal. The New York Times food critic, just demolished Guy Fieri's restaurant when it opened in Times Square a few years ago. And I read the review. I read it on the air, actually, and it was brutal and hilarious. Maybe you can find it. Can you look it up? The New York Times restaurant review, Guy Fieri. Google that and see if we can find it, because some of the quotes are just ridiculous. And also, one of the funniest things ever was Bobby Moynihan. By the way, Bobby Moynihan, his impression of Guy Fieri is one of my favorite Saturday Night Live impressions. I can't believe Guy Fieri didn't come up when we were talking about favorite SNL characters, because Moynihan's Guy Fieri impression is just absolutely hilarious. And there was a time, because he would make appearances on Weekend Update. You know, like they would have him on like around Thanksgiving to give recipes and, you know, around the Super Bowl and stuff. But then they had him on to talk about his new restaurant. And Bobby Moynihan as Guy Fieri actually reads the review in one of his appearances. And it's really hilarious. Really hilarious. Were you able to look it up?
Yeah, I found it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
It's really brutal. Yeah, it's really brutal.
And were you talking about the famous Big Bite Caesar? Is that what you're talking
about? There's a lot of. I mean, he's got a Big Bite is the name. Big Bite is the name of his cooking show. So that's why that's, you know, on one of his 9,000 cooking shows. Well, no, he's only got one cooking show, and he hosts like, you know, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. He hosts Guy's Grocery Game, Triple G and Triple D.
Yeah.
He's an idiot. But yeah, we should try and find and see if the audio for the Bobby Moynihan Guy Fieri him reading the review. Let me look here for a second. Okay. So he's got the It's okay. The ones that are available are Guy Fieri on Thanksgiving. I'm looking at a weekend update on the Super Bowl snacks. Dress rehearsal. Oh, see, here it is. Yeah, that's the. Wait a second. Guy, okay. This was an unaired sketch. Hold on a second. Maybe I can find it here. Oh, I guess they pulled it. Oh, wait a second. Maybe this is it. All right, let me hold on. I think I got it. Hold on a second. I think I got it. All right.
Tom and Tina.
Oh, that's an ad.
First steps in
wait, we'll have to wait for the ad. I forgot that you have to wait for an ad. But anyway, tchotchkes in the movie with all the flair that they had to wear. And the shrimp poppers and the pizza shooters and the extreme fajitas. Seriously, it doesn't sound. I mean, doesn't that sound like a Guy Fieri would have that on his menu? So, all right. So this is Bobby Moynihan on SNL on Weekend Update a few years ago, playing Guy Fieri, reading the review of his new restaurant.
This week, the New York Times published a scathing review of Guy Fieri's new Times Square restaurant that asked rhetorical questions to Fieri, such as, have you ever eaten at your new restaurant? And did you try the blue drink that glows like nuclear waste? Here to comment, Guy Fieri.
Seth Meyers, inflating tires in Hobbit Shires. Oh, wow.
You are in a way better mood than I thought.
I'm happier than butter on gravy, Seth. I can't believe the New York Times reviewed my new restaurant. Full throttle.
Have you read it yet?
No, not yet, Seth. But I bet it's off the chain.
No. You have to read it.
Oh, I can't wait. I would love to, Seth. Reading is how the eyes eat. All right. Let me just throw on my readers. All right. Guy Fieri. That's me.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, that's not off the chain. Oh, that's very much on the chain. Oh, no. What is that? Oh, my God.
Guy, are you okay?
I've never felt sicker in my life, Seth. And keep in mind, all I eat is bacon bombs, which is bacon wrapped in dynamite. I gotta tell you, I'm feeling pretty half-throttle right now, Seth.
Well, Guy, it is the New York Times. I mean, you didn't think they'd like your restaurant, did you?
No, but did they think they would like it? I mean, I wear flames on my shirt and I don't bleach my roots. That doesn't exactly scream hot cuisine. It screams, look out, a maniac's about to hit you with a face full of donkey sauce. You know, I don't look like high society chef, Seth. I look like I'm playing the sun in a school play.
So you think the reviewer's expectations were too high?
The New York Times reviewing my restaurant is like Architectural Digest reviewing a college dorm. My food is best served through a cloud of weed smoke. It's terrific, like Melanie Griffith.
Well, I think the Times only did a review because, you know, this is your first New York restaurant.
My restaurant's not in New York, Seth. It's in Times Square. That's a whole different balls game. I am not competing with Jean Georges or Per Se. I'm competing with the Bubba Gum Shrimp Company and Loose Churros. Grouping me in with regular New York restaurants is like comparing apples and fat dirt.
So you think regular Times Square tourists will appreciate your menu?
Oh, trust me. If you just shopped at the M&M store and you're wearing a foam Statue of Liberty visor, you're gonna find eating my awesome pretzel chicken tenders with a side of dump juice. Pretty great. But if you come in expecting Le Cirque, then you're a Le Jerk. And you can Le Cirque my Le Dirk.
Okay, please. I mean, what? Reading is how the eyes eat?
Oh, that's just magical.
And by the way, can I just say that got cut? That didn't make live. That was from Dress.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. That was from Dress. So it didn't make the show, but it made, you know, obviously they put all the sketches on now on YouTube, all of them, even ones that don't air. Yeah. They all go on, and that thing took off virally. That sketch took off virally. Every time Bobby Moynihan did Guy Fieri, it was funny. Every single time. Reading is how the eyes eat. I think that's my favorite line. Oh, you're a jerk. All right, let's take a break. We got a little distracted away from Office Space there because we were talking about the tchotchke like restaurant in Office Space with the appetizers of shrimp poppers and pizza shooters. Dump juice. All right. I look like I'm playing the son in a school play. I miss Bobby Moynihan, man. I was sad because Bobby Moynihan left. He left SNL because he got a sitcom deal. Do you remember the sitcom he was on for like a season?
No.
Me, Myself, and I.
Oh,
and it was
okay.
One character portrayed by three different actors at three different periods of their lives.
Okay.
He was the middle guy. John Larroquette was the older version, and then there was a kid actor who played him as a young kid. It wasn't very good, but I was really hoping it would take... I love Bobby Moynihan. I think he's really funny. So anyway, but it's not like he's going to be out of work because he's a really talented guy. But anyway, that was funny. All right, Office Space facts and more work show or work topics coming up.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium,
all right,
and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth.
Welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday. You're me, Wildcard Wednesday! And it's any artist, any song, anything. Get your requests in right now. 312-981-7200. Who requested that, and what was that?
That was the Element song.
Right.
By Tom Lehrer.
Mm-hmm. Tom Lehrer, the great Tom Lehrer.
Yeah. And that was Kathy from the 920 area code.
All right, Kathy, there you go. Tom Lehrer, genius. Genius. Hey, welcome back, everybody. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us for Talk and Text. We're talking about Office Space and some facts about that great movie, the cult hit, the movie that had no audience when it was released in the theaters, but has gained a rabid cult following and is celebrating this year its 20th anniversary, if you can believe that. We've got some Office Space facts here, and then we're going to talk about... some real work topics, some fun work topics, and work jargon and things like that. So next here, Diedrich Bader, who's hilarious, had a very specific look in mind for Lawrence, the next door neighbor, who's got like the Fu Manchu mustache and the spectacular mullet. Diedrich Bader, who plays everyone's favorite beer guzzling neighbor Lawrence, came to his Office Space role with a clear inspiration. What I really wanted to look like was somebody who loved the Allman Brothers. That sounds about right. And he does. He looks exactly like someone who would love the Allman Brothers. Of course, you know, Stephen Root, who played Milton, which is this whole thing is based on those little animated things that Mike Judge created. This started out animated. The Milton character started out as animated shorts. And then... the fact is that there is a real Milton out there. Judge based the vengeful staffer, also the focus of several of his animated shorts, on one of his real-life co-workers when he was an engineer. Judge asked the man how he was doing, and he responded that he was going to quit his job because his desk had been moved around too many times. You know, I got to say, as funny as it is, I feel terrible for Milton. Like, the whole movie, I feel bad for him, because he's such a meek character, and you know, he gets so mistreated, and they keep moving him around, they stick him in the corner, and all he cares, and he loves his stapler. Which, by the way, I don't know if you noticed this, but during prep this morning, Ben, I had to search around for a stapler, because...
I did see that.
And I had to go to the newsroom. I had to use the newsroom stapler. Because, see, this is real stuff, man. There's no, I don't have a stapler that works. There are two staplers right outside of the office right here on like the one of the big long computer tables that we have right outside the office, but both of them don't work. I went to the office supply room in the back where it says staplers, No staplers in there, but there is one in the office room. That one didn't work. Hmm. Used to have one. I got one. I got one here. Wait a minute. Does this one work? And it's been sitting right next to the board? Hold on a second. Hold on. I got to see if this works. Then I have to shut my mouth, because if it works, then I'm in trouble. It works.
Oh.
There's one sitting right next to my board, where I'm sitting right now, in front of my microphone, right to the right of my board. Not even 2 feet away from where I'm sitting. Not even.
I just right. hope nobody else that we work with is listening right now.
Yeah,
your secret is no longer safe.
No, I know. So somebody could take this thing right out of the studio.
Vic, you're sworn to secrecy.
No, Vic's got a stapler. Yeah. That's where in the news. He's fine. He's
no,
got. There are like two working news staplers in the newsroom. But and I couldn't
for
find
now.
One for now until somebody comes in and takes it. But no, this one works. I can't believe it. It's my studio. In my studio, right next to the board. I'm not kidding you. I don't even have to get up. I can reach over and grab it. And I just tested it, and it works. Oh man! All right, that was
another mystery solved.
Exactly. And I was doing all the prep in here. And then I was like, okay, I was doing prep, and then I'm going to, I think I'm going to have to go to the newsroom, because, you know, and then I look over now, right now, you know, like 2 hours later, I did the prep like 2 hours ago, 2 hours later, I'm looking at this, and I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Anyway, more office space facts. Jennifer Aniston helped get the movie made. Yeah, well, I mean, of course.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they shot the movie in 1998, that was like at the height of Friends' popularity, right? I mean,
yeah.
That was when it, because, yeah. So, I mean, because Seinfeld had gone off the air at that point, because it went off the air in 1998. So, yeah. Friends was the thing.
Yep.
Friends became the show on NBC at that time. So, of course, she helped get it made. The cast of Office Space has one instantly recognizable name, and that's Jennifer Aniston, who was by then, of course, already a superstar for playing Rachel on NBC's Friends. In a reunion for the film, Judge thanked Aniston for signing on, though he added that she was great in the part, saying, "It helped us put the studio a little bit at ease. At least we had one famous person in it." Hey, as far as I'm concerned, John C. McGinley's a name. John C. Yeah. McGinley's in that movie. Well, mm-hmm. That was before Scrubs, though. So because that, yeah. You know, that was, yeah. I mean, John C. McGinley was a character actor that everybody knew. I mean, he's been in everything. He was in Platoon. He's been in it.
Oh, man. He is one of my favorite actors.
Oh, he's fantastic. He's fantastic. But yeah, and I was surprised at how funny he was on Scrubs, because he wasn't really known for comedy at that time.
Yeah. But just the type of comedy and just the way he delivered it in that show was just amazing.
Yeah. He's great. John C. McGinley is great. And he's great in Office Space. He's really, really funny in Office Space. So, but yeah, Jennifer Aniston was the biggest name at that time. Michael Bolton has embraced the punchlines about him. Why do I have to change my name? He's the one who sucks. Peter's co-worker, Michael Bolton, played by David Herman, hates the fact that he shares the name with a musician who is, in his word, a no-talent ass clown. While the real-life Bolton initially seemed peeved about the mockery, he now signs Office Space DVDs for fans. That's pretty cool that he does that. Well, I mean, you know, I think Michael Bolton has developed a sense of humor about his image now, and I think when he really, really embraced it was when The Lonely Island did the digital shorts, that did the digital short about Michael Bolton, and he was part of it and found a whole new, like, audience, and I think he embraced, like, all the jokes about his hair and all the jokes about him and all that stuff. But if he's signing Office Space DVDs, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. All right. Why do I have to change my name? He's the one that sucks. Oh, man, funny movie. All right, a few more facts about Office Space coming up.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, WKRP. Got kind of started packing and unpacking. Town to town, up and down the dial.
Yeah.
We're never meant to be.
Classic.
Just maybe think of me once in a while.
That's it.
I'm at
yeah. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. Obviously, that was the theme song to WKRP in Cincinnati. who requested that.
We can thank Tom from Griffith, Indiana for that one.
Griffith, Indiana.
Yeah.
All right. WKRP in Cincinnati. Great show. Hey, welcome back, everybody. We've been talking about Office Space celebrating its 20th anniversary, if you can believe that, and some of the behind-the-scenes facts and things that you can look for the next time you watch it. And we mentioned Tchotchke's, which is the sort of strip mall restaurant where the guys go to eat and where Jennifer Aniston works. And this next fact is pretty easy to figure out. It's a thinly veiled TGI Fridays. The chain restaurant by the office is notable not just for its fried food, but for its emphasis on flair worn by the servers. 15 pieces of flair is the minimum. They get a lot of mileage out of that in the movie. Office Space is clearly mocking TGI Fridays, whose staff used to dress with seemingly endless buttons and ornamentation. TGI Fridays actually phased out flair by 2005, supposedly as a result of the movie. Wow. Y2K makes a cameo in Office Space. Well, it did come out in 1999. Peter tells Joanna while having lunch that in his job, he updates software for the 2000 Switch. In 1999, the impending change of the millennium was, in fact, a massive headache for tech companies and their programming of dates, a phenomenon that became known as Y2K, and it shows up in the movie. The movie reintroduced red swingline staplers. Milton's beloved red stapler was actually painted that color by the prop department so that it would pop on screen. As was one of the more hilarious through lines in Office Space, viewers started to seek it out in real life. The brand Swingline, which phased out red staplers, decided to bring the product back. Design-minded executive assistants everywhere can thank Judge. Mike Judge is hiding in plain sight. In an uncredited role, the writer and director plays Joanna's boss at Tchotchke's, reprimanding her about her lack of flair, though it's hard to recognize him underneath the mustache and the wig. Judge is a not-so-secret hip-hop head. Hip-hop is repeatedly played and referenced throughout Office Space, particularly gangsta rap, which was on the ascendant in the 90s. The famous printer smashing sequence is set to Ghetto Boys, Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangster. Also notice Michael Bolton rapping along to Scarface while driving in the movie's opening. Judge has cleverly curated hip-hop into his work, from rap videos in Beavis and Butthead to a collaboration with Danny Brown for Silicon Valley. And then the final fact is that Milton foreshadows the climax a lot. Milton mentions the possibility of burning down the Intertech office several times before actually doing it, making it perhaps the least surprising act of arson depicted in the film. I could burn the building down. So there it is, some facts about Office Space on its 20th anniversary, which again makes me feel really old. So in real life, you know, now you worked in have you ever, besides this job, have you ever like worked in a cubicle or in an office? Cause you know, you worked in the bar business for a long time. That's clearly not an office or a cubicle.
Yeah. Actually, I've been very lucky to not have ever been in an office type role.
I have over the years, and, it's never been as, you know, I mean, the stuff that's in Office Space is, you can identify with it. It's real. It's obviously exaggerated for the movie and made much worse than it can be. I mean, I've worked in offices in the past that were kind of annoying, but I've never come across anything really horrible. But go ahead.
You know what? No, I'm trying to like think back. I did have one. I spent 3 months as a temp for an insurance company.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the temp agency had me go work for a different company that might be known for its oatmeal, and I was working their test products division. I had to sign stuff that said I could not talk about any of the oatmeal that I worked with.
Wait. It was secretive oatmeal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
it was
boy.
Like all their test product stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. You're testing out all that stuff.
Yeah. It was all interesting. Right. Interesting time of my life.
Well, we have some embarrassing workplace confessions. Now, we've all done stupid things at work. I mean, I do stupid things 4 hours every morning at work. And We all embarrass ourselves at work sometimes, whether it's tripping over and spilling coffee everywhere, accidentally insulting someone with a stupid misjudged comment, mistyping a word on social media so that it ends up saying something rude. So in the spirit of making ourselves and ourselves feel better, we've searched the internet asking coworkers for their most embarrassing office stories and workplace confessions. And here are the top 20, the funniest ones that we found. Always check your to box. I sent out an angry tirade about my incompetent team members to my boss. I think I actually used the words "a disgusting rabble of idiots." Didn't realize I pressed reply to all, which was pretty awkward. Now that's a thing. That's a thing that that I have never done and will never do, because if I reply to an email, it's not reply all, or it's not, you know, it's never that. It's never that. You know, you got to make sure. And that's just such, I can't believe how common an error that is.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I know a ton of people who have done it, and it's happened in these offices.
Uh-huh.
It's happened I know a ton of people who've done it. It's like, I hit reply all. I never hit reply all. If I get an email that is CC'd, you know, to a bunch of people or to the whole staff, I never hit reply all. I just reply back to the person who sent it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, this is a very, very common one. That's a very, very common one. Somebody writes something insulting and then hits reply all. By the way, if you have any embarrassing workplace confessions or embarrassing workplace stories, the phone lines are open right now. The text lines are open. That's what we're talking about here in the spirit of office space, but reality. So embarrassing workplace stories, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. How about this one? Sent the following to the entire office. Really sorry I couldn't make it last night. I'll make it up to you this weekend, though. My secret office romance was finished not long after that. So sending out a personal note to someone you're having a relationship with or an affair with, and to the entire office. Again, why would you?
Yeah, that's what your phone is for. You know, yeah. Your cell phone or text.
Okay, how about this one? We nicknamed one of my clients Dick. His name was Richard, but Dick plus his surname created pretty funny popular insult, and I bet you can guess where this is going. So I was emailing my boss about him, mostly nice things, and I called him Dick 3 or 4 times within before pressing send. Obviously, I sent it to Richard instead of my boss. So embarrassing that he did not see the funny side. So apparently his last name to go along with Richard as a first name. That's really funny, because we were talking with Ernie about that in the hallway yesterday, weren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about a very similar situation when our engineer Ernie, we were talking about, because I mentioned the other morning, the character that Tom Cruise played in Days of Thunder was Cole Trickle. And there was a real car race driver named Dick Trickle, right? Or was
Dick Trickle.
Yeah. But then Ernie and I, we were talking about that, and Ernie was talking about how if your last name was, he said, if your last name was Hard, Harde, and you're a cruel parent, you would name your kid Richard. So that so I think that's similar to what happened to this person who sent out the email about Richard. Let's see. I sent a really embarrassing romantic poem to this girl at work via email. A lot of these are just like people making really, really stupid decisions via email.
Yeah.
On what they're sending people.
Well, it's the new millennia. So I feel like that's where they mostly occurs.
Yeah. Anyway, I sent this really embarrassing romantic poem to this girl at work via email. Yes, I know. How romantic. Anyway, I could see her cracking up from the other side of the room, which was bad enough, but then I received a forwarded email from her with my email attached, sent to the whole office. It said, "Look what Tom just sent me." So cringe. There are two Toms in the office, and I'm one of them. She CC'd the wrong Tom, something which people soon realized. Oh, man. By the way, if you have any workplace embarrassing stories, we'd love to hear. 312-981-7200. Here's another one. I sent this email. I hope that nasty little dog finally dies so we don't have to hear about it anymore. Intended for my colleague to my boss about her dog. Yeah. Again, email. These seem to be the most common mistakes that people are embarrassing themselves about in the office. Do not hit reply all. Make sure you double, triple, quadruple check whatever you're writing and where you're sending it. It's pretty easy. Or don't use the office email. And like Ben said, use your phone if you know the person and you have their email, your email or their text, or text them. It's a pretty simple solution to these email issues that people are embarrassing themselves with. But, okay. Embarrassing workplace stories, 312-981-7200. We'll continue right after we break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 o'clock. Wildcard Wednesday. You're being Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. Who requested the Joe Cocker?
Yeah, Joe Cocker, Leave Your Hat On.
Yep.
And that's from Ike out of Country Club Hills.
All right, Ike. All right, there you go. And anybody who hears that and doesn't picture Kim Basinger dancing around is wrong. So there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we're here till 5 o'clock. Coming up at 5, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Vic Vaughn, 720 WGN. Okay. We are talking about workplace confessions, embarrassing workplace confessions. 269 area code says, I work in newspapers and magazines, and I can't tell you how many times the word aunt or bunt, unfortunately, had been spelled with a C, which is very awkward. Yes, it is. And then sad news, I didn't know this, Dick Trickle committed suicide. He died in May of 2013. He killed himself at Forest Lawn Cemetery in North Carolina. Sad story. Didn't know that. We got that texted to us. Okay. All right. Let's get to some more of these workplace confessions. Here's the next one here. So I don't really like babies, and I literally cannot stand it when people just hand me their baby without asking. So my boss came in with her new child and asked if I minded holding her for 5 while she nipped into the bathroom. I completely panicked and blurted out, how dare you assume as a woman I want to hold your child? I do not like children, and I stomped off. I honestly have no idea what came over me. That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. Next one is, these are all real, by the way. We got them through the website. They put out their feelers and said, hey, we want to hear about some of the most embarrassing workplace confessions. These are real, and we want to hear from you on about your real workplace confessions that are embarrassing or work stories. 312-981-7200. Probably when I asked someone when their baby was due, in fairness, they had the same name as someone else in the office that was on maternity leave. It didn't go down well. You never think of this type of thing when it happens to you until that thing would happen to you until it does. Yeah. When's your baby due? What baby? I'm not pregnant. What are you talking about? Oops. Another workplace confession. I wrote what I thought was a hilarious joke for the end of a presentation to my company, to my whole company, and it was a knock-knock joke. I won't even repeat it because it makes me cringe so much. Anyway, when I got to that part, no one said, who's there? So I had to make someone say it. And then when I left a brief silence for someone to laugh, no one laughed. It was just dead silent. I've never gone so red and my whole body was burning. Yeah, could have used my dad for some material. So an inappropriate knock-knock joke. That's a smooth move right there. How about this one? I was at a party once with my husband and the big boss came over. I don't know why, but his name completely slipped my mind. I ended up introducing him as Jack. Yeah. And his name is Mark. That's not good. You should know your boss's name, right? My boss's names are Tad and Stacy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's totally them.
Another workplace confession. I was having a joke around with my boss via email because we've always had a good bit of banter. Then all of a sudden the HR manager calls me into his office to discuss my quote inappropriate behavior. Because I got blocked for flirting with my boss who is married, and I'm pretty sure I was joking about cheese at the time. So joking about cheese, then you're in the HR manager's office. You don't want to be in the HR manager's office. That's you don't want to be there. That's not good. All right, here's the next workplace confession. I was in a meeting and desperately needed the toilet, but felt too awkward to just get up and leave, so I waited and waited. Eventually, it was all too much, so I ran out. I had to choose between two flights of stairs, back to our office, or straight out to the car, and stupidly, I chose the latter. I took off my tights and just casually weeing, praying that no one would notice. You're embarrassed to go to the bathroom? You know, if I'm in a meeting and I got to go to the bathroom, I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm going to run outside and pee next to my wait and pee next to my car. In my first week at my new job, I blocked up the toilet. Far too shy to admit my soul-crushing mistake, I attempted to reflush. Why? I have never left a room so quickly, just listening to the splashing sounds of liquid spilling out onto the bathroom floor. I was at a party one time, and it wasn't me, but I was at a party one time, and somebody did that at the party. Like, flooded the toilet. Like, it was bad. It was really, really bad. And nobody copped to it. Like, you know, like, whoever it was, nobody said, hey, that was me, or it admitted that they did it. But, like, the host of the party went into the bathroom. There was water and other things all over the bathroom floor from the situation.
You ever notice how when those types of stories pop up, it's always, I know a story that happened somewhere, but
yeah.
You never know who it was.
To this day, we don't know who did it.
Yeah.
No idea who did it. And I mean, but it was obviously the talk of the party at that point. It was like, oh, somebody did a number in that bathroom. Next, workplace confession. I was having a really bad day at work, and I felt like I was going to cry, so I took a loo break. Oh, someone from across the pond, obviously.
Yeah.
I took a loo break to call my boyfriend. It was silent in there, so I proceeded to moan and bitch for 10 minutes about how I was going to stomp out in a blaze of glory, and then I heard the toilet next to me flush. I ran away. I still have no idea who heard me. Always check for feet. Always. If you're gonna do anything in the bathroom, it could incriminate you. If you're going to talk on the phone in the bathroom, you got to check the stalls for feet. That's rule number one. All right, next, I don't know exactly what happened, but apparently at some point during my Christmas party at the office, I was found in a toilet cubicle, knickers around my ankles, and clogged up toilet water, which had overflowed all over me. I woke up at our HR's house on the sofa in her pajamas. My guess is that person didn't have that job much longer. Well, I guess all is forgiven at the office Christmas party, right? You're passed out in the toilet with your pants down and toilet water all over the place. Ah, it's the office Christmas party. I'm surprised this didn't happen earlier. Uh, And then this is the workplace confession right here before we break for the news. I run the tap in the toilet at work so that people think I'm washing my hands, but I'm not. Now, why wouldn't you wash your hands? And why would you want people to think you wash your hands if you don't? I don't understand. That one doesn't make any sense to me. That one was committed by a weirdo. So, all right. We got a few more workplace office confessions, and we also have some jargon. We have some ridiculous phrases that people should avoid at work and work jargon. And I would love to hear from you guys if you have specific phrases and jargon for the job that you have. I mean, I think every job has sort of codes or jargon that they use. We certainly do here in the radio business. And I know that in a lot of other places that I've worked, we've had specific phrases that were exclusive to that job. So we want to get into that, too. All right, we're going to break here. The news is coming up right after this.
Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to step down. Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to step down.
5 o'clock in the morning, I'm already up and gone. Lord, I'm so
right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago here till 5 a.m. It's Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? Any artist, any song, anything, get them in now. Requests 312-981-7200. Who requested that one, Ben?
In honor of our labor theme, we get that one from Peter from Decatur.
Okay, there you go. All right. So that's what we're talking about. We were talking about embarrassing workplace confessions, and we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And this is all because we were talking about workplace stuff, because it's the 20th anniversary of the really brilliant movie Office Space, which really captured. Vic, have you ever seen Office Space?
Office, the movie, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. I mean, and it's we were just talking about how accurate that movie is in capturing what happens when you're working in cubicles or in offices. And I'm sure you've had stories about working that over the year, because you've had a lot of different jobs, right Vic?
Not too many set in an office space, but enough to get the jokes.
Yeah
enough to get the movie.
Yeah, and it's, and you know what they're selling, I just saw this on TV. There's some stupid show on right now on TV here, and we have monitors throughout the studio here. And they just showed that they're now releasing a 20th anniversary commemorative official Milton Office Space red stapler.
Nice.
to go along with the anniversary of Office Space.
I could see putting that on my desk. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sure. Would. The red stapler.
Yeah. You have to lock it up every night, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Because staplers are a hard thing to find
around here, as
I've been discovering. Except there's one right next to me that was sitting here all morning, and I didn't even realize it. Now, you know, you saw me go into the newsroom to use the stapler in the newsroom, Vic. You saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there happens to be a stapler right next to my board here.
Right
next to me. Like, you know, I can reach over and pick it up. And by the way, it works, which is a very rare thing within, you know, the near office space here. A working stapler, kind of hard to find around here, especially, you know, at 2-3 in the morning.
You know, it picks up in here in the newsroom. It's obviously quiet overnight, but picks up in the newsroom around 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And I'm seated by the printer, and I'm the only person in the newsroom that doesn't use it. So I get asked by everyone that uses it, what's the matter with this printer? Why is that? Do you know who printed this? Do you know? I mean, at least 10 times before I leave in that 1 hour from the time people start coming until the time I leave.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know where your desk is, and you are right behind your back is right to the back of the printer.
Never used it. And yet I'm the one they ask. Everyone asks, why isn't this working?
You know why? I guess Vic, the rule is whoever is closest to the equipment,
the printer monitor,
gets asked how it works.
Right.
You know? Yeah. That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. Yeah, it does start to pick up during the last hour of your shift, Vic, because I start to notice, you know, like right around, right, you know, like we have our morning engineer comes in at 4, And so that starts the rolling people coming in. And then slowly, like, the crew of the morning show comes in, and then some other people come in. And then, you know, by the time, you know, we're out of here, you know, sometimes I do work after the shift is over, and I stick around maybe a half hour, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour. And that's when it, you know, like right around 6 o'clock, more people start to come in. And then I would imagine, you know, you're only here now till what time are you here till?
6:30.
6:30.
But that's too long, because the new, like you said, the new crew, they start the bright-eyed and bushy, what do you call it? Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed people start coming in around 5.
Yeah.
4 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, they're feeling good. They just slept all night.
Right.
And I'm here another 2.5 hours. Everyone else from the night shift's long gone.
Right.
And I look like I look terrible because I've been awake for, you know, 15 hours.
Yeah,
and everybody else is just nice, fresh shower.
You have the longest shift. You have the longest shift of all of us on the overnight.
Right.
You do. You do, man. You're here the longest of all of us. You know, you do news for half of Patty's show.
Yeah, then your show.
And all of my show, and then a little bit.
And
you
then,
do,
no. Then I do the opening bell, and then the first
opening
one
bell. That's right.
I never thought about that. I do the Patty show.
I do four.
I do your. I do Patty show, your show, the opening bell show, and then the first two. The first
six and 6:30
newscast of the
first.
Cochran
the first newscast of the Cochran show, because then Steve takes over.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh man. Yeah, that's a long shift, man.
Hey, blessed with work. I'm not
there
complaining.
Go. There you go. Very cool. But that's funny though, because the person closest to the printer clearly knows what's wrong with the printer.
Was there any scene like that in that movie? There should be.
Well,
there's got to be some.
Well, there's a scene in the movie, a sort of famous one, where they can't get the fax machine or the printers to work.
There you go.
And then they go nuts. And at one point, if you remember correctly, they bring the fax machine outside.
Yes, and they beat it to death.
They beat it to death with a baseball bat while the Ghetto Boys are playing.
right.
And we can all identify with that. I don't know how many times a piece of... I mean, that's a universal one. Office equipment that doesn't work. That's like what, you know, like people, like you said, Vic, people come in, what's wrong with this printer? You know?
I don't know.
Leave me alone. I've had a tough night. You just woke up and ate Wheaties.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been sitting next to this printer for 6.5 hours.
I can barely move my arms. I've got no energy. No, okay, maybe I'm exaggerating.
Well, it depends on how much rest you get the night before.
It's really not that hard, right?
No, it's not. It's we have a great job, man. I mean, we're you know, this is a fantastic job. I love working the overnights. I know a lot of people think it's weird, but I really like it, and I've always really liked it. Well, one of the things is that I've been a night owl my whole life, and I've worked overnights at Jewel for many years. I worked 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. at Jewel, stocking shelves and doing stuff. Did that for a long time, and then I've always listened to late night radio ever since I was a kid. I listened to late night radio, and it was my favorite thing. And so, I'm really happy to be doing this shift, the shift that I've listened to, that I grew up listening to, and you know,
it's the only shift I've ever worked as well in radio is the overnights.
It's fun, man. You
know, started even as an intern, was on the overnights.
Yeah. It's fun.
I do love it. Yeah,
it's great, and you know, it's fun to work with. And I love working with you, Vic. I think you're great.
It's a blast being on your show. Or, you know, during this time, it's great.
Very, very cool. All right, Vic's in there. We got a workplace story out of Vic right there. I don't control the printer. I believe that's what I am not the king of the printer. So leave me alone. Yeah, office equipment that doesn't work. That's just, you know, that's aggravating, man. It really is. It really is. So, all right. Well, we've got a few more workplace confessions to get to. If you guys want to jump in here, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. I had to get the IT guy to come and sort out my computer because I'd, quote-unquote, accidentally downloaded some porn and icons, and things just kept popping up everywhere. What are you downloading porn at work? Why would you download porn at work?
I love how I said I accidentally.
Accidentally. And by the way, accidentally is in quotes, I will say.
Ah, okay.
It is in quotes.
That's not something you just stumble across.
Oops.
Yeah,
unless the oops moment was like, oops, I'm not at home.
Exactly. I forgot I'm at work for a second.
I mistakenly typed in the 16
I don't understand.
Strokes here's it
a,
took.
Here's another one. I like to chew things. A lot of people do, but this one time I went a bit overboard during a big sales presentation. It was my turn to speak approached. I had somehow managed to pierce my lip with the staple that I was chewing. I shrieked, swore, and bled all over my notes. Why are you chewing on a staple? Who chews on a... Vic, have you ever chewed on a staple?
Hold on.
I don't understand. I mean, I know...
I'm just trying to stop laughing because I'm picturing this happening. Can you imagine trying to not laugh at your coworker bleeding?
Bleeding while they're trying to make a presentation.
Middle, right.
I don't understand. You know, look, I don't have an oral fixation to chew on anything, but I know people who do. I can't tell you the number of... Here's another. How about this, Vic? In shared workspaces where you have pens, like maybe in a cup or something... The ones that are all chewed up, how about those? There's the thing that makes me nuts.
Yeah, that's gross. Yeah, that would be gross.
It's people who chew and I know a lot of people have a nervous habit. They chew pen caps or they chew the top of the pen. But don't leave it in the, you know, I'm not going to use a pen that's been gnawed on.
It's the little caps on these pens that write, the Papermate pens. You pull the cap off and you start chewing on it while you're writing. I don't do that.
I don't either.
But I'm very careful about not even trying to not even touch my face at work just because, you know, the germs that go around.
And I'm certainly not going to chew a staple. I mean, that's just got bad news written all over it. Yeah, I'm going to chew this staple. Oh, I'm shocked. I pierced my lip and I'm bleeding. But what do you think was going to happen if you're going to chew a staple? Especially during a presentation. All right, what's the next one here? I was recently delivering a baby, and as soon as she popped out, she was quite slippery. She fell out of my hands right onto the ambulance floor. In the end, it was okay, but the mother almost literally murdered me. All right, was this an EMT, an actual certified?
if not, that's a big day in his life.
If not, I mean, because first of all, if you're certified like EMT, you shouldn't be letting babies slip onto the floor. That's kind of a top rule. Don't let the baby slip out on the floor. And if it's not an EMT, why is someone who is not an EMT delivering a baby in the back of an ambulance? Just some dude.
It's got to be an EMT.
It's got to be.
You know, they need those receivers gloves that NFL receivers wear. With that, they're sticky.
With the stick-em, yeah. Mm-hmm. On my first day of work, I accidentally called my boss daddy.
What?
I'm well aware that at the age of 33, this is probably not an acceptable term for a father, but there you go, and everyone heard. Called my boss daddy.
That's hilarious. I have told a boss I love you before hanging up.
Yeah.
Same situation probably.
You know? Because you were just, you forgot it was out of habit?
Right.
Let's see. All right, this is the last one. I text my boss, Sarah, something I'd meant to send my girlfriend, Sarah, spelled the same with an H on the end. And I'm not going to lie, it was pure and absolute filth. Said you accidentally sent the filth to your boss. All right. Let's take a break, and then we got some workplace jargon we're going to jump around with here. And if you have any jargon that's like sort of specific to your workplace, we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Because I know a lot of jobs have like specific jargon and specific phrases that are there kind of exclusively used in that job. But what about other? Workplace jargon. That's what we're going to be talking about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we'll do that right after we break here on 720 WGN.
We are poor little lambs who have lost our way. Ba, ba, ba.
Welcome back. Yeah. It's got to be Ba Ba Black Sheep, the theme song from Ba Ba Black Sheep, the Robert Conrad show.
You are correct.
And who requested that?
Bob J.
Bob J. Requested that on Wild Card Wednesday. You hear me, Wild Card Wednesday? Hey, we're going to talk about the biggest and most impressive movie acting debuts. That's going to be coming out. Best debut performances of all time. But we want to fly through some jargon here in phrases that people use in the workplace, since we've been talking workplace stuff this morning. But we are going to jump into most impressive movie debuts and breakout performances. But here are 12 ridiculous phrases that smart people should avoid at work.
Wait, let me get a pen.
Yeah, you might want to write some of these down. Here are the phrases, these are sort of ridiculous phrases and jargon that you shouldn't use at work because you're gonna look like an idiot. I'll give you the phrase, and I'll give you what it means. So don't use blue sky thinking. Blue sky thinking. You've got to do a little blue sky thinking. And that just means thinking creatively. Do a little blue sky thinking. How about in the weeds? Well, I use that. We use that in the bar business.
Yeah.
And in the waitressing business.
Yeah.
But it's called in the workplace, like office workplace, it means too detailed.
Huh.
In the weeds, where, you know, in the bar business, it means you're unbelievably busy.
Yeah.
That you're getting slammed. There's another one. There's another workplace. But in the weeds, I used in the weeds a lot when I bartended. But it's too detailed in the office world. How about net-net? Net-net. It's net-net. And that is, when you add up the pros and cons, this is the answer.
Okay.
How about to synergize? What's synergize?
I've heard that term before, but I've never...
It's collaborate. It means collaborate. Okay. Just use the word collaborate. Let's synergize.
That was more exciting than that.
It sounds more exciting, and that's why people use it.
Sounds like something the Wonder Twins would do.
Yeah. Datification. That's where you add numbers to improve the analysis. Let's do a little datification on that.
Oh, okay.
Operationalize. Come on. That just means put into action. Let's operationalize this thing. Okay, now this one is really stupid. Let's parking lot this.
What?
Let's parking lot this. That means wait. Let's parking lot this. So stupid. How about siloed thinking? And that's forgetting to consider the impact on other teams or parts of the company. Oh, you're thinking in a silo. That's why. Not thinking about your coworkers or your other teams.
Yeah.
That's siloed thinking.
Yep.
Recontextualize. Let's stop thinking of it this way and start to think of it as another way. Oh, no. It's time to eat a reality sandwich. That means get back to the real world for a second. It's time to eat a reality sandwich? I've never heard that before in my life.
I feel like you could say that when we're going to the opening bell. Yeah, it's time
to eat a reality sandwich.
With Steve Grzanich in the opening bell.
It's time to put the soup through the strainer. There's a lot of junk here we don't need. And you put it through the strainer and get rid of the stuff that you don't need.
Yeah,
time to put the soup through the strainer. And then finally, I like trying to put a horn on a donkey and call it a unicorn. It's like trying to put a horn on a donkey and calling it a unicorn, which is a variation on the old standby, trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
Okay.
That's what that is. It's kind of like putting a horn on a donkey and calling it a unicorn.
I like that one.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
All right, how about this one? Land and expand. That's workplace jargon, meaning to sell a small solution to a client, and then once the solution has been sold, expand upon the same solution in the client's environment. See, we used to call that upselling.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we called it at McDonald's. When, like, somebody orders something, you ask them if they want fries with that, or you ask them, would you like an apple pie with that? That's upselling.
make it large for extra large for only 10 cents more.
Blue sky thinking, which we just talked about. Think outside of the box, which you hear all the time. The helicopter view, which is an overview of a job or a project. Let's get our ducks in a row.
I've heard
that many, many times. How about drink our own champagne? It's a term meaning that the business will use the same product that they sell to their customers. The champagne is an indicator that it's a good product. So we're going to use what we're selling. Pushing the envelope. How about this one? Boil the ocean. Meaning to do something that is impossible. Heavy lifting, which refers to the difficult aspects of a project. I've heard that a lot. You're doing the heavy lifting on this job. FaceTime, which is, FaceTime. Now, FaceTime can mean something different now because this means face-to-face. It means actual face-to-face. But FaceTime now means on the phone.
Yeah.
Hard copy, which is a physical printout of a document. Hammer it out to type something up. It means to type something up. Cubicle farm. It's a section of the office that contains the workers' cubicles. Really? I've never heard that before. The cubicle farm.
Are you going to see our good friend Bob Coyne? No, I'm going to the cubicle farm.
I'm going to the cubicle farm.
That's what I'm going to call the sales department from now on.
That's what cubicle. That's what the sales department is, the cubicle farm here.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Desk job. That's the type perfectly. It's typically confined to the duties from a desk. That's what you do. Keep it in the loop, and then finally pick the low hanging fruit. That means choose the simplest option or avenue to accomplish a task. Now that's low hanging fruit means getting the easy stuff.
Okay.
So anyway, there's some work jargon to help you out. Maybe get you out of those situations that you got yourself into when you replied all. So, all right, let's take a break. The news is coming up after this, and then after the news, we are going to talk about the best movie debuts of all time and breakout performances in movies. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in on that.
Well, I'm going to miss her. I get home. Right now, I'm on this lake shore, and I'm sitting in the sun, I'm sure it'll hit me. When I walk through that door tonight,
I'm gonna miss her. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Wednesday. That means Wildcard Wednesday, man, get your requests in. It's 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. All right, Ben, who requested that, and what was that?
That was Brad Paisley, I'm Gonna Miss Her.
Mm-hmm.
And we can thank Squat for that one.
Squat.
And he says, welcome, Ben, and thanks and great show. So thanks, Squat. I'm glad to be here.
Squat's a regular.
Yeah,
he's a regular.
I've started to catch on to some of the regular texters
now. Yeah, so a lot of these people contribute to our year requests every morning for the specific bumps, and contribute texts. And also, by the way, I just want to let people know that the regular Friday features are coming back this Friday. And if you want to participate, here's what you do. Straight Out of Context is when you listen to this radio station 24/7, whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old. You jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. That's nickdshow@gmail.com. That will bring back Straight Out of Context. And of course, Nick D Show Spies, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. You Big Dummy will be making its return, and we'll be rating our dummies, and so that's going to be coming back, and that's where we read actual news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. We read them, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy, and you the listener are our third vote. So after I read the dummy stories, and then we do a full recap, you call up at 312-981-7200, and you're the final vote on who is the dummy of the week. All of that stuff is coming back this Friday. And for people who are who weren't listening at the top of the show or haven't been listening kind of regularly, Dan Shugru no longer produces the show. Dan Shugru left WGN this past week and made the announcement on Monday. So Ben is producing right now, and we thank Ben, and we're working through this transition to make sure it goes smoothly and all that cool stuff. And we're going to miss Dan. Dan had to he had to take a break. He had to he was burning the candle at both ends, and it was having an effect on him, and it was giving him some pressure and stuff. And so he needed to to take a break and do some better stuff for his life. So that's what we're talking about here. And so anyway, Ben is working on all the regular features as well. And again, tomorrow we'll have Triple Play Thursday back. And that's already obviously one artist, two songs. Wildcard Wednesday continues, 312-981-7200. Okay, we are talking about actors and actresses who either made a fantastic, amazing, incredible movie debut. Like, oh my God, that's your first movie performance. And also, maybe actors who've been around for a little while but then had a massive breakout performance. So we're talking about great debut performances and great breakout performances. And if you would like to join us with your thoughts on that, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's see. We got people calling in. And if you want to jump in, great, incredible movie debut performances and breakout performances. And here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm not sure if it was his first movie, but it was the first time I ever saw him. Richard Gere in Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Yeah.
He was like crazy high energy, and you said, this guy is going to be a big movie star.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that was his first movie, but that's certainly the movie that I think broke him. No question about it. He was really, really good in that movie, and it was definitely a breakout performance. So no question, that definitely fits the bill.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, John.
Yeah.
There you go. That's the idea. How about this? Julie Andrews' first movie was Mary Poppins. Right out of the gate. You want to talk about a memorable movie debut and a memorable character. Julie Andrews burst onto the movie scene and into the hearts of audience members everywhere in 1964 as Mary Poppins, the title character in Disney's live-action fairy tale about a magical nanny. She shined throughout, displaying chemistry with both her adult co-star Dick Van Dyke and the children placed under her care, while creating a memorable character that balanced sweetness, sternness, and a pitch-perfect singing voice. A first-time actress managing the charming whimsy necessary to interact with animated characters, while also perfectly carrying the story's emotional weight on her shoulders, is an incredible feat. The film itself is one of the great movie musicals, a true classic defined by her iconic performance that families have cherished for five decades. Many actors and actresses have graced the screen with fantastic debuts. Only a handful of these have been recognized with critical honors like the Academy Award for Best Actress or Actor. So there they go. The first movie. That's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive. So to create a character like that, like right out of the gate, your first movie and you Mary Poppins. Here's another really impressive one. Gael Garcia Bernal was in Amoros Perros, that was his debut. Alejandro González Iñárritu made his debut feature Amoros Perros back in 2000, back when a young Bernal had only been in front of the camera as a child on telenovas. In the role of Octavio, under Iñárritu's direction, the novice performer exhibited a fervent brilliance that would catapult him into stardom. Yeah, he was great in that movie. The character, an unruly guy from an impoverished, crime-ridden neighborhood in Mexico City, dabbles with illegal dogfighting businesses in hopes of obtaining enough capital to elope with his sister-in-law. Bernal's impassioned turn captured the desperate bravado and unrestrained desire that drives Octavio into an abyss of violent decisions and devastating consequences. Amoros Perros presented the actor with a playfield of nuanced stimuli and intricate sentiments, and he avidly exploited them and knocked us off our feet. If you've not, by the way, if you've not seen Amoros Perros, it is truly a remarkable piece of work. I mean, really, just an incredible piece of work. So, how about this? East of Eden, James Dean. Has anyone had made a better film? Has anyone made a better film than James Dean? He racked up quite a few television credits in 51 and 55, but then 55 came the double whammy of first East of Eden and Rebel Without a Cause, and a movie star was born. Rebel Without a Cause is Dean's most famous role, but East of Eden shows what we lost when he died in September of that year. As Cal Trask, Dean shows the emotional range he quickly became famous for, including the way he wrenched his body during expressive moments, which doesn't seem like much now, but Dean's physical performance looked a lot different than the older generation's formal style. Method acting was new, not synonymous with, "I was very uncomfortable making this film." But Dean also showed us something in Eden that we never really see him do again, which was that little smirk he gives in the scene where he introduces Aaron to their mother. Dean is best known for the emotional quality of his work, freely and expressively emoting all over the place. But in Eden, we get a little taste of the potential for playing on calculated, deliberate action. So, yeah, good stuff. Let's see. Here is Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
I'm nominating Jennifer Jones in her first role, The Song of Bernadette. I think she was 17 or 18 years old at the time.
Yeah. Great performance. Great performance. Yeah,
and she went on to other roles, too. And I think she married David O. Selznick, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you might be right. Yeah. Okay, Elizabeth, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, have a good morning. We're talking about great movie debut performances, like really amazing movie debuts, and if not movie debuts, early in their career, the real breakout roles. And we got a bunch of those, too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Maggie, and she's in Davenport, Iowa. Hi, Maggie.
Hello.
Hi.
This actor didn't say a word. Robert Duvall in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, great performance, yeah. Yeah. And that was, I don't know if it was his first movie, but it certainly was one of his first.
Right. It's like Robert Duvall and going, he doesn't see a word, he's behind the door, and it's like, it's the pivotal part of the movie.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He had done a lot of TV at that point before he landed To Kill a Mockingbird. He'd done a lot of TV, did a couple of Twilight Zones, if I'm not mistaken, and other things. But that was really a major impression in the film world. And then Robert Duvall obviously would go on to become one of the greatest actors of all time. So, all right, Maggie, thank you.
Okay, bye.
See ya. You know, Ben, I met Robert Duvall at the Chicago Film Critic Awards back in, I don't know, it was 97, I think. And he came in to accept his Best Actor Award for, oh my God, what was the name of the movie where he was the preacher and he directed it too? Oh, I can't believe I'm blanking on this. It's like from 96 or 97. The Apostle. That's what it was. So he was in town for that. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but he's got a really a smoking wife who is a Latina, and she taught him how to tango. And that's like a passion of his with his wife. And so she was with him, and she's breathtakingly beautiful. And this was, I mean, obviously this is like over 20 years ago, but we were at the post, you know, the post show party where, you know, everybody had accepted their awards and everything. And Duvall was there, and I just wanted to go up and say hi to him and tell him, you know, what a big fan I was, because he's Robert Duvall.
Oh, yeah.
So this was in, like, 97. So I walk up to him, and he's sitting at the table holding court, you know? And he's like, hey, take a seat. And I'm like, hey, I don't want to bother you, Mr. Duvall, but, you know, I'm a huge fan of your work. I think you're one of the best actors on the planet. And he shakes my hand. He goes, hey, you call me Bobby D. Now I'm like, oh, all right. He said, take a seat, man. You call me Bobby D. And he had three bottles of Patron in front of him. And when I was a drinking man, I was not a tequila drinker. Tequila did not do good things for me. But, you know, when Bobby D says, do a shot of tequila with me, you do a shot of tequila with Bobby D. That's what you do.
I would think so.
When Robert Duvall goes, you want to do a shot of tequila, you tell Robert Duvall yes. When he's said that you can call him Bobby D and do a shot of tequila, you do that. That's a memory that you want. That's an experience that you want. So he pours everybody at the table. There's like five of us at the table. Pours everybody at the table. He pours some Patron. And when we put our glasses up to cheers. Now remember, Ben, this was 1997. his cheer, his toast was, "Yo quiero Taco Bell."
That's awesome.
And then we did the shot, and he's like, "I like that. I love that damn dog." So there you go.
That's awesome.
Bobby D loved the Taco Bell dog. So there you go. All right. We're going to take a break. We are talking about amazing movie acting debuts or incredible breakout performances where people became stars just like in one movie.
Choose yourself out from the middle of the floor. Blow a little kiss to the woman next door. Step on the gas, put your hand in the air.
Make yeah. a sign and you throw back your hair. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell, and coming up at 6, Steve Cochran with your morning drive. Also coming up, the stories that matter in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Vic Vaughn right here on WGN Radio. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in, any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. What was that, and who requested that one?
That was the Resurrection Shuffle by Ashton Gardner and Dyke.
Mm-hmm.
And we can thank John in Oaklawn for that one.
All right. There you go, John. All right. Welcome back. We are talking about incredible acting debuts in movies, like the first roles that were just incredible. You can't believe that they were their first movies. And also, even if in another category similar to it, maybe it wasn't their first movie, but it was, certainly was an unbelievable breakthrough role for them. So... we got some texts here. 708 area code says Natalie Portman and Leon the Professional. Very true. Very true. I hate every frame of that movie, but it's very true. She's really great in that movie. Made a very big impression. I also love her in Beautiful Girls. I think she's phenomenal in Beautiful Girls. 815 area code says Tatum O'Neill in Paper Moon. Yeah, she won an Oscar for that movie, too. 847 says, have you mentioned Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born yet? Her performance was beautiful and memorable, and I wasn't a Lady Gaga fan before. Me too. Was not a Lady Gaga fan before. But I think she's terrific in the movie. And she is. That is definitely... It is her first movie role, but she has acted on TV like American Horror Story and things like that. But yeah, she's great. Great in A Star Is Born. 779 area code, Harrison Ford in Star Wars. That was a breakout role. Wasn't his first. He was in a lot of movies before Star Wars.
He did American Graffiti
before that. He was in he did a lot of movies before Star Wars, but obviously Star Wars was the big breakout. 815 area code, Meryl Streep in Kramer versus Kramer, All That Emotion. Kramer versus Kramer, great role for her, but not her first. Not her first. She had been in several movies before that, including The Deer Hunter. She was in The Deer Hunter, too. 219 area code says, Nick, Gary Berghoff is Radar in the film MASH, and then he later took on the role of Radar in the TV series. Very true. If I'm not mistaken, only actor from the movie to star in the TV series. Everybody, all the other characters, I believe, were recast. And actually, the movie is so different than the TV show.
Oh, so different.
And so great, you know. But, yeah. All right, what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. We have one from this year. And that would be Elsie Fisher in Eighth Grade. Her first movie, she did some... She's done a little bit of voice work in... she did a little bit of voice work in some animated movies. But not much, you know, not much besides that. And someone writes, the more I think about Elsie Fisher's revelatory turn as Kayla Day in Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade, which, by the way, is a terrific movie, it's the more I become convinced that she's one of the greatest actors of her generation. It takes a lot to make Kayla stand out in a sea of insecure cinematic teens, but Fisher's approach feels so fresh and so new. As a bright-eyed middle schooler swimming in the haze of hormones and social media, she infuses her performance with confidence. The more she tries to look chill in front of her classmates or works on her budding social media presence, the more Fisher subtly shows the audience that all the advice Kayla gives to her quote-unquote fans about being yourself are things she desperately wishes that she could put into practice herself. It's a great film debut. an absolutely great film debut, and she's really so great in eighth grade, and we're gonna see a lot of her. We are gonna see a lot of her in the future. There's no question about it. So here is Todd on WGN. Hey Todd.
Hey Nick, how you doing? Love your show.
Thank you.
I remember being a young man and going to see a movie called The Road Warrior with Mel Gibson.
Yeah, well, you know, Mad Max was before Road Warrior, and he had done a few movies before Mad Max in Australia that I think barely saw the light of day in America. But his big breakout role was before Road Warrior. It was the original Mad Max, which was like 4 years before Road Warrior.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. But he made a huge impression in both of those movies. All right, Todd, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yep, Mel Gibson, Mad Max. 540 area code says Saoirse Ronan in Atonement. Yeah, you know, that's not her first movie. She actually was in a couple of movies before that, but that was because she started out really young. Saoirse Ronan started out really young in the business. Like, I mean, I want to say like she was 5. When she made her movie debut, but Atonement was the one, and she was a kid in that movie, and she was phenomenal in that. And Saoirse Ronan is one of my favorite actresses, and I just find her so beautiful and adorable, and I could listen to that accent all day long. It says, best to Dan. He was a great radio producer. We thank you for that. 815 area code, Anthony Perkins in Psycho. Yeah, again, wasn't his first movie, but it certainly was the breakout. No question about it. 779 area code says, hi, Nick and everyone. I'm not sure when in his career he made Cool Hand Luke, but Paul Newman was great in that movie. And that's Sandy from Woodstock, Illinois. Yeah, that was about, he had made a bunch of movies before Cool Hand Luke, but that certainly was one of his breakout roles. Julia Roberts in Mystic Pizza. That's a good one. That is a good one. That's a good one. Mystic Pizza. She really stood out in that. How about 1928, Mickey Mouse and Steamboat Willie? That's a good one. 630 area code. 708 area code, Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now. And then Charlie Sheen in Platoon. It's interesting how they did, you know, both have those performances in Vietnam. Martin Sheen, at Apocalypse Now, Martin Sheen had already made a ton of movies. He had made a bunch of movies before that. 309 area code, Linda Blair in The Exorcist. That's a really good one. That's a really, really good one. Yeah. Yeah, she got nominated for that, too, right out of the gate. Got a nomination. And this is the one that whenever I talk about first roles, you know, and this is the one that when Esmeralda was a part of the show, when Esmeralda Leon was a part of the show, she would always mention this one, Edward Norton in Primal Fear.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable film debut. Unbelievable. I remember seeing that movie and just immediately going, oh my God, who is this guy? Who is this guy? Never heard of him before. And it was his first movie. He got nominated for an Academy Award for it. And now he's Edward Norton. Okay. We don't have a break here. So we're just going to, throw it to the news here. And then we've got more of breakout performances and debut performances to talk about. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It's Wednesday. That means we've been doing Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, baby, Wild Card Wednesday. And who requested that?
That was Martin from Schaumburg.
Yes.
And a little Crossfire from Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yes. One of the greatest guitarists that ever lived.
I agree.
I was lucky enough to see him twice before he died. And yeah, he was amazing. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking about either great, incredible movie acting debuts or unbelievable breakout performances that made people a star with just like one performance. And what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And here's a breakout one. This one isn't a debut. But it's a breakout, and it's the great Tilda Swinton in her movie, in the movie Orlando. She was so great in that movie. And I love Tilda Swinton. I think she's great. I think she's fantastically strange and makes really bold and weird choices. I loved her in the three roles that she played in Suspiria just this past year. And I just think she's great. I love her in everything. And you know, she's one of those sort of chameleon-like actresses who can kind of play anything. And she's got a very distinctive look and a very distinctive style. But Orlando was her big breakthrough performance. The British thespian's gender-defying performance as the titular character in the 1992 remake of the Virginia Woolf classic truly heralded the arrival of a fearless new talent. Swinton is an artist in the truest sense of the word, and had an unpredictable career, and it's been a thrill to watch her, as they say here, as they write about her. How about this one? Shailene Woodley in The Descendants. Yes, we're all aware she's everyone's new favorite young actor or wood elf when she was in The Secret Life of the American Teenager sometime before she showed up in The Descendants, but it was playing against George Clooney with Alexander Payne's direction that the girl's chops really shined through. In a role that could have come off as your average whiny teenager, Shailene was touching, real, and a bit of a revelation. She was great in The Descendants, and she's turned out to be a really, really terrific actress. No question about it. We're talking breakthrough roles in movies. Let's see. Here's Ike on WGN. Hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
All right.
I have an interesting one for you. Of course, when we think of Tom Cruise, we think of his breakout in Risky Business. But before then, he did a very I don't think it was debut, but it was very interesting. Underrated movie, very underrated performance. I thought he did. It was in the movie called, you remember the movie Taps?
Of course. Yeah, he played the psycho in Taps.
Yeah, it's beautiful, man. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. He's great. He's great in it, and it was a great. But that wasn't his first movie. Was Endless Love?
Endless Love, and then Busting Loose, and then yep.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. All right. Thank you, Ike.
No problem.
Take care. Yeah. Endless Love. Yeah, Tom Cruise makes his debut in Endless Love, and one of the dumbest, like, I think he's just in one scene in Endless Love, and it's just really one of the stupidest roles that you could, I mean, it's just ridiculous. He plays one of the friends, the lead in the movie was this actor named Martin Hewitt, who they were really pushing to be like a big, you know, a big hot young teen star. But the movie was so awful. Endless Love was so awful. I mean, like, truly, truly awful. That, like, Martin Hewitt's career basically disappeared. You know, obviously, Brooke Shields would continue to have a career and continues to have a career. But that ended this guy's career. It was such a stupid movie. And it was a really terrible performance. But Tom Cruise plays one of his idiot friends who gives him the idea to burn down his girlfriend's house. Or set a fire at his girlfriend's house and then put it out and rescue the family to get back in the good graces of his ex-girlfriend. And then he ends up burning the house down. Just the stupidest thing. But yeah, that was Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise came up with that fantastic idea. Hey, why don't you I read about this guy who set a fire, put it out, and then he became a hero. That was Tom Cruise in Endless Love, which is an unwatchable movie. Let's see. Here's John in Decatur on WGN. Hi, John.
Hey.
All right.
I was going to say Ellen Page in Juno.
Yeah, that was that wasn't her first. Her first movie was Hard Candy, but she was the big breakout. She got nominated for Juno and obviously became a star because of that movie. And it's a great, great, great performance.
I was going to say Clint Eastwood became an international star, but I don't know which was the first one, the Sergio Leone movies.
Yeah, well, those were the ones that broke him for sure. For sure.
And then the last one. I can't remember the name of the movie. I think it was School Days with Rodney Dangerfield. Sam Kinison, baby.
Yeah, that's you with Rodney Dangerfield? No, that's Back to School.
Back to School.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Okay, take care. But Rodney's first movie was Caddyshack, man. Good, man. That was his first movie. Caddyshack, baby. How about this? A big breakout performance for Jared Leto in Requiem for a Dream. Here's the thing about that. You know, Requiem for a Dream is a movie I'll never, ever watch again. I mean, it's a good movie, but I will never. It's one of those movies that's so disturbing. So disturbing and so intense, and especially the last, like, 15 minutes. The last 15 minutes of Requiem for a Dream is like an assault. It's like an assault. I felt like somebody beat the crap out of me for 15 minutes. I wanted to kill Darren Aronofsky. And I'll never watch Requiem for a Dream again, although it is a good film. But that was Jared Leto, I guess, as a film star. That was, I guess, his breakout role. And I would agree with that. But he's Jordan Catalano, man. You don't discount Jordan Catalano from My So-Called Life. You don't do that. Don't forget about Jordan. Just conveniently forget that he was Jordan Catalano. Come on. 301 area code says Michael Keaton Night Shift. Yeah, that was kind of a star making performance. It really was. He was really funny in that movie. That was Henry Winkler, Shelley Long, and Michael Keaton really stood out in that movie, Night Shift, directed by Ron Howard. 708 area code, Danny Lloyd, who played Danny Torrance in The Shining, also his only film credit. Yeah, that kid dropped off the planet. I think he moved out east, and he was a professor, I think, at a college. But he didn't do any other movies after that. And that was a big movie. I mean, a big, big movie. And I mean, you know, you're right out of the gate, you're this little kid, and you're working with Stanley Kubrick on a adaptation of a Stephen King book with Jack Nicholson in the lead. I mean, my God. And everybody loved his performance is great in the movie. He's really great, but he just never wanted to do it anymore. 815 area code, Oprah Winfrey in The Color Purple. Yeah, that's true. That is true. And let's see, John Travolta in Welcome Back, Kotter. Well, that's not a movie debut, but I mean, his breakout role was clearly Saturday Night Fever. Although before that, he was in Carrie. And I think his first movie was The Devil's Reign, which if you've never seen this movie, Ernest Borgnine plays Satan in it. Devil's Reign. At the end of the movie, it rains and all of the devil's disciples, including the devil, melt. I remember that, including Travolta. Travolta melts in that movie, too. here's Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Nick. It wasn't the first movie, but to me, it's a breakout. Jack Nicholson, an Easy Rider.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge breakout role. Absolutely. You know, I mean, who could forget, you know, like his reactions to everything and wearing that football helmet and the.
Yeah. Weed scene.
Yeah, he was doing movies with Roger Corman before that, was the one that put him over the top. No question about it.
I just had to throw it in.
All right, thank you, Steve.
Yep.
All right, let's break here for some weather, and then we'll come back and talk more breakout roles and movie debuts that were amazing. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Phone lines are open. 312-981-7200.
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why. Yeah. Oh,
my favorite Elvis song of all time. I think the best vocal performance in the history of Elvis Presley. I love that song. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man! It's any artist, any song, anything. That obviously is If I Could Dream by The King. Who requested that?
That one was For You from Patrick in Hampshire.
Oh, well, thank you, Patrick. Very nice of you. So we're talking about either incredible debut movie performances that knocked your socks off or great breakout roles, even if they've made movies beforehand. We got a ton of text coming through, but I want to mention one that is a pretty obvious one. That's Timothy Hutton in Ordinary People. Timothy Hutton in Ordinary People, it is a truly remarkable performance. He won the Academy Award for it right out of the gate, and he's continued to do really cool work for many, many, many years. And I mentioned Beautiful Girls, which is another one that we talked a little bit about earlier in regards to Natalie Portman. So But Timothy Hutton as Conrad Jarrett in Ordinary People is both a phenomenal film debut and one of the greatest performances from a young actor. With his mournful frown and spastic tics, he is a captivating bundle of anxiety, a ticking time bomb of overwhelming emotion on the verge of bursting, which does in full force in the painful and moving nervous breakdown scene. The guilt and grief over the loss of his brother looms over him like a great black cloud. Hutton deftly captures the desperation of a young boy drowning in his shame and sadness with his naturalism. So, a great performance. No question about it. How about the breakout performance for Gwyneth Paltrow? This website has chosen Emma. Even though she was in Seven, she was in Seven before that with her head in a box. But her breakout performance with that kind of, you know, showed her trademark elegance and all that stuff. They're saying is Emma, which I think is a good choice. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. And let's see. Here's Troy on WGN. Hi, Troy.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Great George Lucas film, American Graffiti.
Yeah.
And Richard Dreyfuss.
Right.
Harrison Ford.
You had Cindy Williams, you had, Ron Howard. I mean, there's a cast of a lot of people who had worked in the business for a while, but all of them in one movie. Paul LaMatt, who never gets mentioned. When anybody mentions American Graffiti, Paul LaMatt never gets mentioned.
Paul LaMatt drove the 56 Chevy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But no, he drove the Deuce Coupe. I'm sorry.
Did he? I don't remember. I haven't seen the movie in a while. But, American Graffiti has a ton of great young actors in it that would go on to incredible success.
Saw it at the Milford Theater.
Yeah, at the Milford over on Milwaukee. Great classic.
Over on Milwaukee.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Troy.
50 floors and out. Have a good morning.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right.
Was that the first movie Wolfman Jack was in?
I think it was.
I think it was.
And, well, I mean, he had been legendary DJ at that point. But I think using him in the movie was a pretty brilliant thing. And then he'd been in a couple of other, he'd voiceovers for a couple of other things. And of course, he was the voice of, he was the announcer on Midnight Special.
That's right.
The late night concert series that would run on Friday nights in the 70s. He was the voice of Midnight Special. Here's David on WGN. Hey, David.
Hi, I was going to mention Otto and Airplane. I don't think anybody's mentioned him before.
Well, that is a memorable performance, Otto the automatic pilot from Airplane.
Yeah, I think Wolfman Jack's first movie was Hollywood Nights.
No, that's after American Graffiti.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah, Hollywood Nights was after American Graffiti. Actually, Hollywood Nights, thank you, David. Hollywood Nights owes like a check to American Graffiti. and I love Hollywood Nights. I think that movie's hilarious, but it is remarkably similar to American Graffiti. To American Graffiti, only much, much more adult and much, much raunchier. Here's Scott on WGN. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right.
Hey, being you mentioned Hollywood Nights, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer. Michelle Pfeiffer's. That was her movie debut. Tony Danza's girlfriend in that movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Good flick. Very funny.
Very funny movie.
You guys, with Wolfman Jack and everything. So yeah. Good tie-in. Great show.
Newbomb Turk. Come on, man. Hilarious.
Yep. The punch is spiked.
yeah, exactly. Take care, Scott.
All right. Have a good one.
The punch is spiked. Have you ever seen that movie, Hollywood Nights?
It's been a really long time.
It's a very funny movie. Very, very funny movie. Well, let's get to the obvious one that I should have mentioned, immediately.
Say, man, you got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Let me tell you this, the older you do get, the more rules are going to try to get you to follow. You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older,
They stay the same age.
Yes, they do.
Dave Wooderson is portrayed by Matthew McConaughey. Matthew McConaughey, the patron saint of the Nick DiGilio Show. One of the greatest movie debuts of all time. One of the most memorable first characters ever. His catchphrase, all right, opens my show every morning, and was the first line he ever spoke in a movie. His first line ever was, all right, and that became his catchphrase. And when he won his Academy Award for Dallas Buyers Club, of course, he had to say, all right. One of the best first roles of all time, seriously. Let's see what else we got here. Cloris Leachman in Kiss Me Deadly, that's a good one. James Remar in The Warriors. Ooh, loving that somebody's picking James Remar. Playing Ajax in The Warriors. You know, we were talking about movies that we watched like over and over again. Warriors is another one of those. I know every frame of that movie.
Yeah, I totally agree with that one.
Oh, my God. How about Diner? First movies, Ellen Barkin, Paul Reiser, Tim Daly. Also starred Mickey Rourke, Steve Guttenberg, and Daniel Stern. And Kevin Bacon. Judy Garland, Wizard of Oz. Newt in Aliens. She never went on to do anything else, though. She went on to she did not have a show business life. I don't even remember the actress's name who played Newt. Tony says Mitch and Dazed and Confused. Mitchie. Dazed and Confused had a lot of actors. That's another one. Like American Graffiti, you go back and look at the cast of Dazed and Confused, and they all went on, most of them, a good portion of them went on to a lot of success. And really cool, and a really cool career. Glenn in Arlington Heights, he also says the Michelle Pfeiffers in Hollywood Nights. that, of course, the Michelle Pfeiffers is a reference to Key and Peele's valet drivers who mispronounce actors' names all the time. Michelle Pfeiffers, why has everybody got to mess with the Batmans? Liam Neeson's. Jodie Foster in Taxi Driver. That was not Jodie Foster. That was not her first movie. Jodie Foster made a lot of movies before Taxi Driver because she started out, I mean, seriously, as a baby. And she was the girl on the Coppertone ads, the little girl whose swimsuit was being pulled on by the dog. That was her. That was Gina. That was her. That was Jodie Foster. All right. Benicio del Toro in The Usual Suspects. That's Martin from Schaumburg. That's a breakout role because Benicio del Toro had made a bunch of movies before Usual Suspects, but... but that clearly was his breakout role. That was where people went, who the hell is this guy? So, all right, we got a break here for the news. When we come back, more unbelievable movie debut performances and breakout roles to talk about. And we want to get your input at 312-981-7200. And we'll get to the news right after this.
In the eyes of a ranger, the unsuspecting stranger had better know the truth of wrong from right. Cause the eyes of the ranger are upon you.
Yeah. Wild Card Wednesday continues. 312-981-7200. Okay. The Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
Walker, Texas Ranger. Who requested that?
That was from the 219 area code.
Okay, 219 area code, little Chuck Norris.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but was Chuck Norris's debut Enter the Dragon?
Not Enter.
It was not.
It was Return.
It was Return. Okay.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
He's not in Enter
That's
the
right,
Dragon.
Correct.
It's, Return,
okay.
It's Return of the Dragon.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was one of the dragons.
Yep, yep. That and, was, and he was really pudgy and really hairy. So he learned how to eat more correctly as he went along, and he learned how to wax because he was like Captain Backhair in Return of the Return of the Dragon. All right, we are talking about great film debuts or breakout roles. If you would like to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Gina Davis, 312, says Gina Davis in The Fly. Yeah, that, I mean, it was, she was great in that, but she'd made movies before that. She was in Fletch. She was in Tootsie, met very memorably in Tootsie. But yeah, The Fly was like one of her first really big, great roles. And she was terrific in it. Let's see. Jennifer Hudson had a breakout debut performance in Dreamgirls. Very, very true, which earned her an Oscar. And how about Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours? One of the best movie debuts of all time. was Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours. I remember watching the first time I saw 48 Hours, and you know what? That's another movie that could have fit into the category that we were talking about yesterday, movies that you've watched over and over and over again. I know every line of dialogue from 48 Hours. I've seen that movie so many times. I love that movie. But I remember specifically seeing 48 Hours for the first time ever. I was with my girlfriend at the time, and after the scene in Torchy's, when Eddie Murphy, when Nick Nolte gives Eddie Murphy his badge, and Eddie Murphy comes in, pretends to be a cop, and shakes down all the rednecks that are in the bar, I remember when that whole scene, when it ended, like when he was, there's a new sheriff in town, and his name is Reggie Hammond, and he starts to walk out, y'all be cool, and then he starts to walk out, I said to my girlfriend, leaned over to my girlfriend, and I said, he just became a star. It was that. I mean, that's one of those scenes where that's a star-making scene. I mean, the whole performance, everything about that movie and everything about Eddie Murphy in that movie is great. But that scene was, I mean, I remember just like, that's it, man. This guy's a star. Just be based on this one scene, this guy's going to be a movie star. It's just such a strong, incredible scene. 630 area code, Russell Crowe in L.A. Confidential. 708 area code, Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. That was his breakout role, but his first role, if I remember correctly, he was in Uncle Buck, which was before Home Alone. 708 area code, Christopher Walken in The Deer Hunter. Definitely his breakout role. Got him an Oscar, but he was in movies before that. He was in a lot of movies before that, including Annie Hall. He played Diane Keaton, played Annie Hall's crazy brother, who fantasized about driving his car into oncoming traffic. Upcoming traffic, and then I told Woody Allen about this fantasy, and then they drove Woody Allen and Diane Keaton home, and they cut to Woody Allen sitting in the car terrified. 773 area code, Ray Liotta in Something Wild, a great performance. Oh man, an unforgettable performance. That was like, who is this guy? Yeah, Ray Liotta in Something Wild, which set the tone for the kind of dark characters he tends to play. The darkest of which is the Centrex commercials, which I think are the most terrifying thing that Ray Liotta has ever done, quite frankly. Johnny Depp in Platoon, ha-ha, they say. Yeah, that was his debut. No, his debut was Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare on Elm Street was his first movie, Johnny Depp. 708 area code, Haley Steinfeld in True Grit, a great performance. A great debut, and then they say it led to Bumblebee. Listen, don't forget about, let me just, if you guys are going to talk Haley Steinfeld, you have to talk about Edge of 17. Edge of 17, one of the best teenage coming-of-age movies I've ever seen, and her performance in it is ridiculously great. She's so, so great in that movie. I love that movie, and I love that performance. It's one of my favorites. Here's a big one. How about Frances McDormand in Blood Simple? She would go on to marry Joel Coen, and that was the Coen brothers' first. That was their first movie. So yeah, Frances McDormand, and she obviously would go on to do many amazing movies, win a couple of Oscars, and you know we've talked before about you know, incredible villains, best villains of all time. And usually topping that list, or very near the top of that list, is Hans Gruber from Die Hard. And I still, it's hard for me to believe that that's Alan Rickman's first movie. It's still hard for me to believe that right out of the gate, Alan Rickman plays one of the greatest villains in movie history. He is so great in that movie. Really hard to believe that was his first movie. It really is. How about this one? Jason Schwartzman in Rushmore. Playing Max Fisher. A great performance, a truly memorable character, and a really, really great movie. Jason Schwartzman. He knocked that out of the park, first time out. Hey, the breakthrough performance for Julianne Moore. This website says it's Shortcuts, which is the movie where she really did break through. She had made movies before. I remember her, the first time I remember her vividly. I mean, she's in The Fugitive, which came before Shortcuts. She was in The Fugitive, most memorably here, you know, shot in Chicago. But I remember her vividly in The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, the Rebecca De Mornay evil babysitter movie. She was great in that movie. I had no idea who she was, but I just remember her making such a huge impression on me that I was like, who is that actress? But they're choosing Shortcuts, her great performance in the Robert Altman classic. Julianne Moore entered our lives naked from the waist down and screaming. It may not be a usual way we meet promising young actresses, but in Robert Altman's Shortcuts, she gave us an intimate view of a real heartbreaking domestic situation, and it was pretty unforgettable. Very true. Very true. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
I got a couple from classic Hollywood.
Yeah.
James Cagney in Public Enemy and John Wayne in Stagecoach.
Oh, man. Public Enemy. Classic. And, you know, I just remember, I remember the first shot of John Wayne in Stagecoach was so... So incredible, because they never zoomed in on an actor like that. I mean, that was just very incredible.
Rescued him from B movies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and then this, and Ford just goes, "Here's our movie star. I'm gonna give our movie star some close up time here." And it was such a radical way to introduce
exactly,
a leading
man.
Yeah. So good stuff. All right, Mike. Thanks, buddy.
Okay, take care.
Okay, dude. Take care. 312-981-7200. Here's Terry on WGN. Hi, Terry.
Yes, sir. Morning.
Morning.
George Clooney in the attack of the or the return of the attack that killed the tomatoes.
The return of the killer tomatoes. Yeah, I'm sure he's thrilled that you brought that one up, Terry.
him and his big fro and good 70s look.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one. All right, Terry. Thanks, man. Yeah, great debuts. The Return of the Killer Tomatoes with George Clooney.
Yeah, that one was pretty awesome. Mary Vandeville just ran in here, got in my ear, and said, "What about Anna Paquin in The Piano?"
That was the next text I was going to read. Anna Paquin in The Piano. Wait a minute. Let me get.
Mary just sat
Mary
down.
Mary just sat down. Let me see. Hey, Mary. Are you there? Mary? I can't hear her. I have you up in here.
Oh, hello.
Hi, there it is.
Somebody turned my mic off.
Now, why would they do that?
I don't know. Whoever's in here last.
Oh, don't be messing around with Mary's mic.
That's right.
Anna Paquin in the Piano. How great was she?
Oh, my gosh.
Wasn't she amazing?
Such a bizarre movie, but...
That's one of my favorite movies.
It's one of mine, too, but it's disturbing.
No, it is. It is. It's really disturbing, and it destroyed me. Every time I watch it, I get really emotional.
I do, too.
And I cry like a baby during it, and I think... She and Holly Hunter and Harvey Keitel, Sam Neill, everybody in that movie.
Everybody was fantastic.
And by the way, do you remember how adorable Anna Paquin was when she won the Academy Award?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
She had a really cute outfit.
She had a cute outfit, and her eyes were wide like saucers when she was up there because she was like really scared and nervous, and she was just looking at Holly Hunter for advice.
Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah.
So cute, and she's still fantastic.
A great actress. A great actress. Yeah, no, that was a remarkable debut. And another one of those debuts, Mary, that where like right out of the gate they win an Oscar. That doesn't doesn't happen all the time.
It was like Jodie Foster, didn't
it? No, Jodie Foster...
She didn't win, did she?
No, she didn't win until she was an adult.
Okay.
She won for her first Oscar, and this is crazy because she acted for such a long time. She was nominated for Taxi Driver.
Right.
She didn't win. Her first Oscar was for The Accused, and that's the film where she gets raped and they go to trial.
Right, right, right.
And then she won again for Silence of the Lambs. So she's won two of them, but it took her to become an adult before they gave her one. Yeah, been in the business for a long time. How about here's another one, Mary? What about Drew Barrymore in E.T.?
Yes,
that a pretty great performance right there from a little kid.
Yeah, well, she was so darn cute. How could she not do well?
She was adorable.
You know,
yeah, absolutely. And she's gone on. You know, she had a rough spot though. You know, in her teens, in her late teens, when she had some, you know, substance abuse issues and stuff. But she came back. Still has a great career going.
She's on some. Isn't she a judge now?
She is on The World's Best.
The World's Best.
The one that's hosted by Corden, James Corden.
Yeah, I watched a couple of those.
Did you?
Yeah. I can't take it anymore. There's too many of them.
Well, the one that I care about is on tonight.
Talent.
The mask. The Masked Singer, which is the greatest television show in the history of the medium.
I can't take on another one. Sorry.
I'm being facetious when I say that. It's the stupidest show I've ever seen, but I love it, and I can't stop watching it.
Who was under the poodle outfit? Tori Spelling.
Tori Spelling.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, and the last one that was unveiled was The Alien, and that was LaToya Jackson.
Well, who's going to guess her?
I guessed her.
You did.
Yeah, both of us did.
Yeah, I got it right.
Did she sing?
Yeah, she sang. Yeah. Oh. By the way, Ben likes the show, too.
I love it.
I'm sorry.
I love it. You're missing out, Mary.
I know if I start watching it, I'll get stuck.
I know.
It's kind of like with The Bachelor. Oh, yeah. It's so bad this year. And I'm still watching it. I'm like, why am I doing this?
And this dude this season is a virgin, right?
Yes. Yes, he is. And he still is, and I think there's one show left. Uh-huh. Two shows left.
All right. Yeah. One more chance to lose his virginity on live television.
Oh, that's what everybody's waiting
Ridiculous.
For.
Ridiculous. All right, Mary, thank you very much. That's a deep Beatles cut right there, man. Not a lot of people request this Beatles song. Who requested it for Wildcard Wednesday?
We can thank Carlos from Woodstock.
Carlos from Woodstock choosing that deep Beatles cut. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're here till 5 o'clock. And coming up, the opening bell with Steve Grzanich. And also coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio with Vic Vaughn. And we're wrapping it up here this morning on this Wednesday morning. And we are talking about great, incredible film debut performances and breakout roles for actors and actresses. We've covered a lot of fun stuff, and there's still a lot more. Here's Dave on WGN. Hey, Dave.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to say Jason Lee in Mallrats.
Yeah, he was a skater. He was a skate punk before that.
Yes, he was.
And he's hilarious in Mallrats.
He steals the show in every scene.
Yeah, he's great in it. He's really, really funny in it. And then, of course, he would go on to a lot more success, including My Name is Earl, which was such
My Name is Earl is my favorite show with the most disappointing ending.
Yeah,
ever.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
I devoted four seasons of that. Watched every episode, and then they end it like that. Yeah. That is the most horrible way to end the show.
I agree.
Anyway,
I agree.
I gotta go, Nick. I love you. Take care, buddy.
Take care. Yeah, bye. Jason Lee and Mallrats. I like Mallrats. I remember when Mallrats came out. Kevin Smith took a lot of heat for it. But I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan of that movie. Here's Kevin on WGN. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, yeah, Nick. Was just thinking, true breakout role for Sylvester Stallone was Rocky. But before that, it was Lord of Flatbush.
Yeah, Lords of Flatbush.
Lords of Flatbush. And then you also had, you guys were talking earlier about Young Starlets. And you had Tatum O'Neill in Paper Moon.
Yeah,
her father.
She got mentioned earlier.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
No, that's okay. That's okay. And it was she also won the Academy Award for that one too. So, all right. Hey, thanks. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks.
All right. Here's a couple more. This is a great one. This was from somebody submitted on a website, and I totally and absolutely agree with this. Anya Taylor-Joy in The Witch, and she's gone on, obviously big success in Glass and in Split. But she was so good in Thoroughbreds last year. Her and Olivia Cooke, those are two of my favorite performances last year, was Olivia Cooke and Anya Taylor-Joy in a really great underrated movie called Thoroughbreds, which came out last year. But I remember the first time I saw her in The Witch, it was just such a startling performance. Such a great, great performance. And of course, the one that we have to mention, Orson Welles in Citizen Kane. Great performance, but he also wrote it and directed it. This is his first movie, and he made what is considered the greatest movie of all time. And then Kate Winslet and Melanie Lynskey both made their debuts in Heavenly Creatures, Peter Jackson's amazing movie, Heavenly Creatures, which two insane, intense performances that I'll never forget. So, hey, Nick, Ben and Vic, Mark Ruffalo, and You Can Count on Me, that's a great one. That movie is so good. That's Jay, by the way, who chose that. Mark Ruffalo and You Can Count on Me. I remember the first time I saw You Can Count on Me. That was one of those moments where it's like, man, this guy can act. This guy can really act. And it's a great movie, too, with him and Laura Linney. Emma Stone in Easy A. Yeah, that was kind of her breakout. It was her breakout role. But she was great in Superbad. She was really great in Superbad.
And she was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, well, she's awesome in everything. I love Emma Stone. Yeah. I just think she's fantastic. And she's great. Currently, she's nominated for an Academy Award for Supporting Actress, and she's in The Favorite, and she's outstanding in it. Drew Barrymore in E.T., which we mentioned already. Another vote for Timothy Hutton, Ordinary People. Whoopi Goldberg in Jumpin' Jack Flash. Was that her first movie? Really? Wow. Okay.
Hmm.
Sean Connery as James Bond. That was obviously a breakthrough role for Sean Connery. Sissy Spacek and Martin Sheen in Badlands. Great choice. Dennis Hopper in The Sons of Katie Elder with John Wayne. Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone. Oh, man, yeah. That was another one of those movies where I was like, who the hell is this? She was great in Winter's Bone. And obviously, Jennifer Lawrence has gone on to, you know, to have an incredible career, Oscars as well. How about The Bruce in Evil Dead? Bruce Campbell in Evil Dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell will be at the Flashback Horror Convention this year.
Will he?
Oh, yeah. So along with Sam Raimi.
Oh, I might have to come hang out.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll hook you up. Don't worry about it. Tom Hardy in Warrior, an incredibly underrated movie, Warrior. Lou Diamond Phillips as Richie Valens in La Bamba. That was a breakthrough performance for sure. Ryan Gosling in Frankenstein and Me. Richard Dreyfuss in Jaws. Yeah, that was his breakthrough role. He'd been in movies before. I mean, obviously, American Graffiti is the one that we mentioned. Angelina Jolie in Hackers.
That's a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate. Yeah, Robert Blake in In Cold Blood. Great performance. And let's see, Bradley Cooper in Wedding Crashers. Yeah, I didn't, you know, I hated Bradley Cooper because I hate the Hangover movies. I hate them. I don't think they're the least bit funny, and I hated Wedding Crashers. And I hated Bradley Cooper until he started, you know, doing stuff like American Hustle,
you know what,
Silver Linings Playbook.
You know
and
which
stuff.
One I loved with Cooper?
What?
When he was in the A-Team.
Oh, yeah, the A-Team. Yeah, the A-Team.
I thought he was an awesome face.
Yeah. No, he was good in the A-Team. It wasn't until, but when he started working with David O. Russell was when I started taking him seriously. Then I was like, okay. And now, I mean, the guy's great. The guy, he's tremendous. And his achievement with A Star Is Born is remarkable. You know, directorial debut out of the gate. Co-wrote it, stars in it, sings in it. Madeline Kahn in What's Up, Doc? Oh, that was her first movie? Okay.
Yeah, we've had a few texters.
All right.
Shoot that one out.
Steve McQueen in The Blob. That's right. That was his. Yeah, Steve McQueen was in The Blob. And then finally, Samuel L. Jackson in Coming to America. He's trying to rob the McDougals in that movie. When you think of Akeem, think of garbage. Coming to America. All right, we got a break here. The news is coming up next here on WGN, and we'll be back tomorrow. Triple Play Thursday and much more.